back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
My inbox is now going to be full of people asking for details on how they can win a 42-inch plasma TV for at least the next 20 minutes. And there are a few people whose understanding of radio and gift for it was so acute who would find that more amusing than James Whale. A lovely tribute, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we will turn our attention first, and I suspect for once, possibly even foremost, to an extraordinary gulf between what people think about immigration and what the facts actually tell us. I can't remember seeing this chasm in understanding quite so starkly displayed as it is in some new polling. And, of course, it begs the question, what do we do about it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has told LBC she is ready to resist any legal challenges over a new migrants deal with France. The pilot will see people who've arrived in small boats return to France in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to the UK. Ms. Cooper says she is expecting the first detentions within a matter of days. Conservative frontbencher Andrew Griffith says it won't act as a deterrent.
If you're given the chance of a lottery ticket and you've got a 90 to 95% chance of that ticket winning, allowing you to stay in the United Kingdom, then I don't think that's going to have the deterrent effect that, for example, our Rwanda scheme, which would have been a genuine one in, you're off to Rwanda, then we'll process you and consider whether you have a fair claim from there or not.
Engineers are working to restore power to around 22,000 properties in the north and northeast of Scotland. Disruption from the aftermath of Storm Floris is continuing across much of the country. Works underway to clear trees from several railway lines. Aidan McGiven is from the Met Office.
These are exceptional wind speeds for August. It's difficult to find similar strength storms going back decades. So these could be some of the strongest wind gusts ever recorded, even in a windy part of the country, for the summer.
The television presenter Jay Blades has been charged with two counts of rape. West Mercia Police says the 55-year-old will appear in court over the alleged offences next week. People with a record of violence or domestic abuse are to be prevented from owning guns. New guidance says police should interview partners and carry out additional checks before issuing a firearms licence. It follows several high-profile shootings, including the Kiam attack in Plymouth 4 years ago. And it's exam results day across Scotland. Around 147,000 students are due to receive their national higher and advanced higher results, but Storm Floris means some postal deliveries could be delayed. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 24 at 91.56, the pound buys $1.32 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most places, calmer this morning, but still some heavy rain across central and northern parts, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten and I have got a problem. It is happening. I guess it was perhaps inevitable. From the moment that Nigel Farage turned up in Dover with his Fisher-Price binoculars and started filming people coming in on small boats, people who constitute a tiny, tiny, tiny proportion of our overall immigration figures, and of whom, I think last time I checked, over 70% end up having their asylum applications approved. The narrative has been successfully, just as the narrative of European Union membership was successfully manipulated. The nation was successfully gaslit into believing lots and lots of things that weren't true. And the problem I've got is that I don't know how you deal with it. It's tempting to ignore it, isn't it? It's tempting to ignore the people who scream daily about one tiny aspect of our immigration situation and provide absolutely none of the facts that are necessary to forming an informed, evidence-based opinion. If we've learned anything in the last 10 years, it is what can happen when you have strong and pungent opinions that are not rooted in reality. That is when, I think, the really bad stuff happens. Do you remember, I'm haunted by the thoughts of a caller. Did we clip it up? I'm haunted by the memory of a caller from about, in my mind, it's about 3 months ago. And he said, I've got very strong opinions. And I said, oh, that's interesting. What are they based on? He said, it's not my job to base them on something. Do you remember that? I can't quite remember it. I think he speaks for a huge swathe of the population. And I don't know what to do about it. I mean, for an easy life, we could just ignore it, couldn't we? Together, you and I, plenty of other people on LBC will be wanging on about it forever. Again, possibly contributing to the problem that I'm about to describe to you rather than seeking to solve it. But do you surrender? Do you give up? Do you roll over? Do you choose the easier life? Because that way, madness lies. You ignore the facts and you leave the field free for the people who deliberately warp understanding and deliberately gaslight nations, then the really bad stuff happens. Have you seen the figures for Brexit? It's quite an apt moment, actually, to remind you of what happens when people actually get to see the rabbit, when people actually get to unwrap the box that has been placed under their Christmas tree by the likes of Boris Johnson and his mates. You actually get to see what's inside it, and support for not being in the European Union anymore plummets to, I think, about a third. And that is the problem I've got this morning. I don't know that there'll ever be an equivalent for immigration facts, immigration figures. And I know, listen, it's a really fertile ground to scream fear, to explain. Some people have even let the mask slip on occasion and revealed that they are in the business of selling fear, of scaring people regardless of the facts. But it sells newspapers. It brings in television audiences. It brings in radio audiences. Not the biggest, of course. That's us. But it does nonetheless bring in radio audiences. It delivers a frisson that you can't really deliver with the facts. How many times have I said to you that the queue for the ghost train will always be 100 times longer than the queue for the weight machine, the speak your weight machine? And it just is. It just is. Some people know it. Some people cling to the knowledge that they are peddling lies because it is a very good career. It's very lucrative. Some people are absolutely falling for an incredibly widespread propaganda campaign. And it's not born of racism every time. I mean, there's a heck of a lot of racists up to their neck in this kind of stuff, but it's not born of racism. It's born of clicks and giggles. That gets a bigger following. That gets a bigger response. Everybody's poring over numbers. It used to be circulation figures. Now it's going to be online activity. What's getting the biggest responses? What's getting the biggest numbers? We're an unfashionable bunch on this program, is that we always speak our minds and shoot from the hip and hope that things prove popular. What we don't do is have a look at what's popular and then seek to emulate or repeat it. But that is a position of privilege. I've been here for a very long time. And what has drawn my attention this morning is this. I'll give you this juxtaposition of headlines in Rupert Murdoch's Times newspaper. Half of Britain's back ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. That's the news story, okay? And it's true. Let's be under no illusions about that. That is true. Half of Britain's back ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals, okay? If it's a headline that you don't like and it's based upon polling, you can, of course, say, well, no one asked me, or how can they possibly get a valid response from a sample of X thousand people? That the science of polling is fairly well established. And while it's not infallible, it is largely reliable. It is the best available guide of what the public think about things. And this headline is true. Half of Britain's back ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. But when you read into the research by YouGov, you make some discoveries that are not reflected in the top headline. I don't know if you heard yesterday's show when Sam Friedman, former education panjandrum, explained to us how the newspapers were misleading you about private schools. You have a headline saying 50 private schools have closed since new Labour's VAT rules came in. But as you read down that article, you would have discovered, if you were relying on the facts rather than the frightening headlines, that the number of private schools in this country has risen in total since that VAT rule was brought in by about 35, and that the number of private schools that shut every year before and after Labour's VAT changes was around 50. So you see what I mean about manipulating or misleading or even straight up lying to people. Because this is the headline, and it is true. We can't, I have to keep coming back to that point. Half of Britain's back-ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. And then you read into the second bit. The research also suggests that the public is misinformed about the nature of migration to the UK, with many overestimating the proportion coming illegally. Now, I mean, even I, as someone who does this stuff for a living, albeit that I find it hard to zone in on this particular issue every single day in a way that people who are peddling perhaps the propaganda that creates this misinformation and creates this misunderstanding seem to relish, it's a simple misconception of scale. Over nearly half, 47% of respondents believe that the immigration to the UK is primarily illegal rather than legal. So you've got half of the population, almost enough to win a referendum, who believe that people here illegally, and remember that is a challengeable phrase because it's only relatively recently that we've started describing refugees and asylum seekers who can only come here via irregular routes, i.e. by crossing the channel in small boats, as illegals. There is a technical defense of the use of that word, but there's no moral defense of it. It is the only way that a genuine refugee or asylum seeker can make their way to the UK. So we find ourselves in this absolutely ludicrous situation where people being described as illegal up until the point that their asylum application has actually been processed, at which point they become entirely legal. How many people even understand that simple nuance, that simple wrinkle? So about half of the public believes immigration, illegal immigration, whatever they think that means, is much higher than legal. It's about 4%. I'm going to say that again. I'm not suggesting that you need to be absolutely comfortable with that figure or that it's good news. It doesn't bother me particularly, but I fully accept that if you are absolutely outraged by the prospect of people in this country who've come via irregular routes, then 4% is far too high. But how the hell does half of the country end up thinking that 4% is more than 96? So 96% of people who have arrived in this country in the year to March arrived regularly or legally. 4% arrived irregularly, or if you prefer, illegally. I don't think there's much point in me talking to you if you just want to poo-poo the numbers. That's fine. I get it. You have to carry on believing whatever it is that you want to believe, regardless of the facts and evidence. But take some comfort from the fact that newspapers, including Rupert Murdoch's Times, choose to report this under the headline, half of Britain's back-ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals, because that's made to make you feel better about the fact that you're being lied to, or at least, at the very, very least, you're being hideously misled. But that headline is designed to make you feel better because there are people at the Times who have been, shall we say, complicit in the process of gaslighting an entire population. I can't believe the numbers. 4%. 4%. People have been persuaded that 4% is bigger than 96%. And of that 4%, about 86% of 4% arrived via the small boats. So it is a large percentage of a tiny fraction that have informed almost all of the discourse, both in public and in the media, about the issue of immigration that I can remember seeing since he turned up in Dover with his Fisher-Price binoculars and his determination to find something else to scare people rigid with as Brexit began to fall apart. It's extraordinary, right? And, of course, he's just one man, albeit he's a man who does occasionally tell you the truth.
Anyone that thinks politics isn't about sales doesn't understand politics. You know, it is about sales. Of course it is. It's about selling ideas. It's about selling ideas. It's about selling hope. It's about sometimes selling fear. I mean, they're the things that make politics work.
Just caught himself there, didn't he? Because you could hear him swallowing the word fear. He thought, oh, rats, I've said it out loud. Have another listen to that and then listen for the swallow towards the end.
Anyone that thinks politics isn't about sales doesn't understand politics. You know, it is about sales. Of course it is. It's about selling ideas. It's about selling ideas. It's about selling hope. It's about sometimes selling fear. I mean, they're the things that make politics work.
No mention of facts, no mention of statistics, no mention of numbers, no mention of honesty, decency, improvement to people's lives. It's all about sales. It's all about hope. It's not, though, is it? It's all about fear. How do you frighten people? Does the truth matter? Of course it doesn't. 47% of respondents believe that there is way more illegal immigration than legal, when the real figure is 96% versus 4%. That is the mark of a failed state, almost, isn't it? I saw a message this morning pointing out or describing this as a huge failure of the political class and a huge failure of the media. And it occurred to me as I read those words that it was actually a huge success. Huge swathes of the political class, including that fella. That was a clip from a documentary called Nigel Farage, The Man Who Made Brexit, which was originally broadcast on Channel 4 in 2020. Although, of course, he's successfully managing to wash his hands of responsibility for that debacle now, even as, to return to some statistics, the number of people who support it has plummeted. And the media class have contributed to this almost unbelievable, what are you going to call it, a knowledge gap? I like the phrase contempt for the con men, compassion for the con. You know that I do, and I will cling to it until my dying day. I'll cling to it until my dying day, because I watch it happen on a daily basis. I watch it happen in real time. I listen to it happen. The effort put into persuading people of things that aren't true. Just a tiny example, that private school story yesterday. And a lot of the time, the people doing it don't even know that they're doing it. It's a bit like asking a leopard to change its spots, if you like. But this is serious. We've seen what happens when we let these liars and charlatans hold the floor, hold the room. We end up leaving the biggest single market in the history of humanity and sailing solo into an uncertain and increasingly dangerous world. And it's happening again. And there is no more powerful proof than the fact that the public believe things that are absurdly untrue. I mean, monumentally untrue, almost unbelievably untrue. And those are the people that want to see the mass deportations, and those are the people that want to see the cessation of all immigration, and those are the people who are, if you like, the sons and daughters of Brexit, the grandsons and granddaughters of Brexit. They've moved on from wrecking the country as a consequence of one massive lie perpetrated on them by people who flee the scene of the crime before the flames have even died down, onto the next massive lie, which is here, which we are now seeing the evidence of. We are seeing the evidence of what happens when people are fed an unleavened diet of misinformation and or propaganda. They end up believing things that are catastrophically untrue. And it is what people believe. And it's scary, right? I mean, that's why sometimes I wonder whether we should be talking about this stuff more. The more poison is being injected into the bloodstream of a population, surely those of us in the business of providing antidotes should be working ever harder. But how do you deal with this? How do you address this? How the heck do you address the fact that a third of the population believe the number of illegal migrants entering the UK is, quotes, much higher, end quotes, than the number of legal migrants? The numbers are completely contradictory of the claims. How do you deal with it? So there are two questions, okay? 0345 60 60 973, other numbers that you need. And don't shoot the messenger. If you're desperate to believe that this problem is much bigger than it really is and you don't want to be comforted or informed, then that's absolutely fine. But you're listening to the wrong radio program. loads of places you can go to have your prejudices inflamed now on a daily basis. This just isn't one of them. Because the question I've got is this, and you might think the answers to this are obvious, but they're not. How has this happened? 03456060973. Have we learned nothing from Brexit? Did Magna Carta die for nothing? How has this happened? How have we ended up living in a country where people haven't just got things a little bit wrong about immigration? They've got things wrong by a scale that is actually visible from space. They think that there are more people coming irregularly than regularly when the real ratio is 4% to 96%. How the hell has that happened? 03456060973. That is question number one, and it's crucial, and we have to ask it, even if it means opening up these very, opening up sores, festering sores of hatred and self-promotion from people who probably know that they're lying to people, but are too busy counting votes and bank balances to care. They lied about Brexit, and now they're lying about this. And then the second question, which I don't think you can answer, but we can try together, right? We can have a swing at it, even if we don't come up with any definitives. What the heck can we, stroke anyone, do about it? Well, how do you even begin to push back against such epic evidence of a gaslit nation? We are a gaslit nation. And the gaslighters are on the march. Probably popping up on LBC again next week to take your calls. And what they are peddling is categorically untrue. You've got the law and order stuff while I'm on the subject of Farage. Here is a man who doesn't think that the voters of Essex should be told that their candidate has been banged up for battering a woman, but who thinks he can somehow cast himself as a paragon of law and order. It's hilarious if it was happening in another country. You'd marvel at it. You'd think that they controlled all the media. The people who are simultaneously claiming that they care about law and order while also claiming that the voters of Essex shouldn't be told that the candidate they've put up to stand has been banged up for battering an ex-girlfriend. It is insane. But it all feeds into the question, what on earth can you do about it? So how has this happened? 03456060973. I wonder if you've got the whatever it is you would need to tell me how you think you've ended up believing such absolute nonsense. And how on earth do you push back? 03456060973. And remember, these are the people who've peddled these lies, the people who have gaslit the nation, are the same people who are praying for riots on your streets, not their streets. Don't get me wrong, they're not expecting any violence or difficulty in the corners of the country where they reside, but they're praying for violence on your streets. They're lionising and championing people who have literally called for pogroms while other members of this population were setting fire to hotels full of humans. They are praying, they are begging, they are almost salivating at the prospect of more violence, and they have gaslit this nation. How? 03456060973.
LBC.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
You know, Kayak isn't just another flight comparison app. When you download the Kayak app, you download flight enlightenment. With Kayak, you see things others can't, like the latest great deals from both airlines and booking sites. You can filter your searches and set up price alerts so you... Not now.
Oh, sorry.
So you're notified when there's a price drop on the flights you want. See more, do more, save more with Kayak. You can do the gong now. Download the Kayak app today and go see for yourself.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like Rachel Johnson's Difficult Women.
Join me as I sit down with game-changing women who don't always play by the rules.
Everything was so great. I would say that once I looked on the stage and saw the Pope and the President kind of swaying to the black gospel choir that I was able to bring in, that's the moment that I was like, you know, you did this.
Plus, there is so much more. Global Player. Download it now for free.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
24 minutes after 10. Sometimes you can't get the numbers to sing, can you? You've sort of got the wrong words. But you have roughly half of the population believing that there is more irregular migration than regular, when the real figure is 4%. So they think that a number that is around, let us say, 50%, say 500,000, is in reality 4%, say 44,000. How has that, it's the scale of the lie that I'm fascinated by. How has something so hideously and obviously false ended up being believed by so many of us? And I say us, I don't believe it. Slightly taken aback by the number of people that did. But you know people who believe this. You may be one of them. How has this happened? Phil's in Sandbach. Phil, what would you like to say?
Hi, there's a couple of points I wanted to make. You said, you said kind of, do we ignore it for an easy life? And I don't think there is an easy life. I think there's pain now or there's pain later. Mm. So I think that we actually need to address it because the pain later will be more significant. But the state that we're in at the moment hasn't been something that's happened overnight. It's been a three-decade, particularly the last decade.
I slightly disagree with you. I think that the usual engines of hatred were a little bit idle when the Tories were in power. It's only since Labour have come into power that things have been ramped up enormously. You're always going to have extremist politicians on the fringes begging for clicks and attention, and you're always going to have some elements of the media tickling their toes when they should be holding them to account. But you've seen some of the bigger tanks now move on to the immigration lawn. You can't interrupt me when I'm interrupting you, Phil. And that is a political. So you've got to look at what the people who own the Telegraph or the people who own the Times or the people who are buying up the media in this country, what they want in Downing Street. And then you perhaps get an idea of why the heat has been turned up so much on the immigration question lately. Sorry, carry on, Phil.
I was saying you wrote about it in your book. How they broke Britain, and Lawrence Rees, with his warning from history, wrote about how that kind of ramping up of fear can lead that population into not critically thinking, blaming somebody else for their woes. And I think we've seen that ramp up post-Brexit, and that's why people aren't necessarily seeing the numbers for what they are, but they're reading those sound bites.
But I haven't got the answers. I haven't got the answers for this scale of misinformation, for this scale of misunderstanding. People who actually think it's a majority, as in over 50%, when it is 4%. 4%.
The misinformation is louder, so therefore the misunderstanding is louder.
It's not even misinformation, though. So, you know, they count the number of boats that have crossed the Channel this year, and the figure that they provide you with is accurate. But people don't know, somehow, the overall figures, or they don't know the proportion of the overall...
They don't read past the headline.
But they will do on some days. I'm not being a devil's advocate here. No. I'm genuinely... I'm being curious. 948,000. You know that headline, once a year, you'll get the usual suspects having an embolism about the overall numbers, even as they are now coming down by quite big figures, quite big margins. They are now going to come down, partly because of changes to our legislation, and partly because, of course, of Ukraine and Hong Kong and Afghanistan and other slightly anomalous world events. But they know that. So, you know, once a year, they are invited to have a fit of the vapors about the overall numbers, and once a day, they're invited to have a fit of the vapors about this tiny proportion of the overall numbers. And it's very hard for me to phrase this question without sounding condescending. How can they not join those two dots together, Phil?
Well, I think there's just too much information there. So do people actually take the time to understand what the actual facts are? Do they just read the headline and go, actually, that meets my worldview. I don't like foreign people, and therefore I'll just accept that it confirms my bias, and therefore I'll just run with it.
I'm a little bit more generous than you are, Phil. I know that the people in that category exist, and they, for example, now almost have successfully subsumed the whole of Twitter, judging by some of the abuse sent to Rishi Sunak over the weekend. But I don't think a lot of the people, even up to and including some of the people turning up outside asylum accommodation in Epping, hate foreigners. I really don't. Something else has happened. Something, I don't know, is it subtler or is it crasser? It's different from what you describe. And you're kind to mention my book, but I don't have answers to the questions that I'm asking today. Not on this kind of scale. So if you look at Brexit, 52% of the electorate were persuaded of things that weren't true. Okay? I know some people are still a little bit uncomfortable with that analysis, but I, you know, time will tell. History will eventually reduce the people who thought it was a good idea into single figures. That's just as inevitable as the tide coming in tomorrow or today. But that was 52-48. So you've got a relatively tight squeak. And the engines of misinformation and lies, which were, of course, largely as well driven by some racist elements, prevailed by a whisker. How do you end up believing that a figure that stands at 4% is actually 52 or 60 or 70%. That's the bit I don't... The sheer scale of the misinformation in this very specific case. And, of course, the question of what we can do about it is something that we need to turn our attention to as well. Here's Thomas Watts with your headlines.
The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has refused to put a target figure on a new migrants deal with France. A pilot of the one-in, one-out scheme is beginning this morning, but critics say the numbers involved won't make a difference. The former Arsenal footballer Thomas Partey has appeared in court, charged with rape and sexual assault. The 32-year-old Ghanaian national has been granted unconditional bail at Westminster Magistrates Court. Network Rail Scotland says it's dealt with hundreds of fallen trees overnight after Storm Floris. The storm also left thousands of properties in the Highlands, Aberdeenshire and Murray without power. LBC weather, a calmer morning with sunshine and showers for most places. The rain a bit heavier in central and northern parts, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddie.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Imagine your dream holiday made possible by comparing cheap flights on Kayak, walking on an unspoilt goes on for miles beach on the Sardinian coast, plunging into the splendour of an idyllic lagoon in Greece. Ah, yes, this is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare prices from hundreds of travel sites and airlines to find your dream deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
The new single drops. The world tour begins. As artists create the music we love, you could be right there in the mix. Calling all young creatives. If you want a career in music, then listen up. Global Academy have a new 6-4 music production course. State-of-the-art studios, practical experience, hands-on learning with music professionals. Awesome! Apply now at globalacademy.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
I mean, some of the stats here are quite well established. Perhaps I shouldn't have been as shocked by them as I actually am, but They're worth revisiting. Tax Policy Associates did some research into this not long ago, looking at what everybody thinks the government spends the most money from tax on. And after the NHS, for many voters, particularly right-leaning voters, spending on migrants and asylum seekers was the highest. Not quite among Labour voters, but they weren't that far behind. Whereas in reality, you spend more on, this is in 2023, health, state pensions, local government, social security, education, debt interest, defence, transport, DESNZ, overseas aid, that's come down since, childcare, asylum and migrants, and then the cost of MPs is the only thing on this graph that's actually lower. So the other question I've got for you is, and this might sound a little bit odd, I want you to remind me why it's really dangerous that so many people believe these lies. So many people believe this propaganda. So much of the population has been gaslit. Why is it dangerous? The obvious answer is things like riots. But a lot of the people who turn up at those events would turn up at any invitation to cause trouble. Why is it dangerous that our population has been so spectacularly misled about the realities of immigration? What are the people doing the misleading? Two questions. Why is it dangerous? And what are the people doing the misleading hoping for? 0345 6060973. Could be that the same answer applies to both questions. Siobhan's in Gravesend. Siobhan, what would you like to say?
Hi there. Nice to speak to you again, James.
Likewise.
What I don't understand is why there's not more pushback from our government. There's just no pushback. I see a lot of Nigel Farage and his cronies just talking absolute
baloney.
Yes, that's what I was looking for. And there's no pushback. You know, the statistics, you know, when they're talking about young girls and women being attacked, they're not talking about, the scale of domestic violence there is in this country.
I mean, Farage doesn't believe that voters should be told if one of the candidates for his own party has been incarcerated for beating up an ex-girlfriend. He doesn't think that should be revealed to voters.
No.
So I don't quite understand what his concern in that area is. But you're right, I haven't heard anybody put that point to him, that very simple point.
And two out of five of the protesters last year at the riots had convictions for some kind of domestic violence.
40% had been reported for domestic violence. So, so we know that that's not true. Why does it work so well?
Well, we've got no pushback. I mean, really, to sum it up, I read something wonderful the other day that I had to screenshot.
Yeah.
The Tories gave millions of pounds to Michelle Mohn for some, at best, highly...
I think they're illegal. There are legal wheels turning at the moment, so I don't know that I'm going to... I'm not confident enough to let you carry on reading that out. It's not in any... I'm sure it's me being overcautious, Siobhan, but better to be overcautious than undercautious. What does pushback look like? Let me lead you down that road instead.
I'm just saying, well, rich people, perhaps on the right wing, will buy yachts, and what I'm saying is yes, we're worrying about the wrong people on boats.
Yes, and why can you see it so clearly, and yet other perfectly pleasant people are persuaded of the polar opposite? 0345 6060973. It's funny how people struggle. Thank you, Siobhan. And again, I say I was being overcautious rather than undercautious, so don't in any way feel that I was casting aspersions upon your authenticity. The simple question of scale it opens up the door to the question of why. So I'm interested in why people fall for it. It might be worth reminding ourselves of why people do it, you know? Why people do it. People who, for example, do what I do for a living can access exactly the same statistics that I can access. I can sit here and say, I'm going to dedicate an hour of my show every day for the next 6 weeks to 4%. 4% of people coming into this country in total. I'm going to pretend that that the irregularity or the illegality is a much, much bigger problem than it actually is. I'm going to dedicate hours and hours and hours to talking about the 4%. I'm not going to mention that of that 4%, about 70% of them will turn out to have genuine asylum claims. I'm not going to mention any of that. I'm just going to keep wanging on about 4%, so that you end up thinking that 4% actually represents a majority. Why do they do it? Chris is in Brighton. Chris, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. I was really just echoing exactly what you were saying in your last sentence there, is that broadcasting companies and the printed press are constantly wanging on about it. It's the amount of coverage that is swamping every other argument. And, I mean, you might as well, I have
to say... Why do they do it, then? Why do they do it?
They do it because they know that it gets listeners. And it gets listeners because it creates conflict.
But I've got more. Let's not make it about me. I've got more listeners.
No, I'm not making it about you.
I am. And then I'm pretending that I'm not, because that's, you know, what you're supposed to do when you're being incredibly conceited. I've got more listeners than all of them.
Yes,
I don't do it. So that argument doesn't quite work, does it?
Well, it does when you look at the content of those programs. You might as well call the breakfast presenter the Nigel Ferrari show, because he's on there every week.
It's not on every week. He is on a lot, but, you know...
If he's not on, then the subject of illegal immigration and boats... I mean, the London Boat Company is what really the LBC ought to be called, because...
Now you put me in the position I was in yesterday when I'm thinking, I can't talk about it as well.
Well, no, well, you are talking about it.
I am today.
The subject, and I know that 4% is the correct figure, but other presenters on LBC are constantly pushing the idea or the notion that illegal immigration is the biggest problem in this country. It goes across the board. I listen to a lot of LBC, and at the moment, it's only yourself and Nick Abbott.
I'm sure that's not true. But anyway, you make me slightly uncomfortable when you start putting the boot into colleagues. But I'm not going to censor you or stop you, because they're all big enough and experienced enough to address any points that they feel need to be addressed. But
it does get very tedious after a while.
Well, no one's forcing you to listen any more than anyone's forced to listen to me. But let's talk about, if we can, I mean, you obviously listen more closely than I do, so that's absolutely fine. I'm not refuting anything that you've said, but I am more interested in what it speaks to. Because, listen, again, I didn't want to make it all about me, but if you were going to be talking about the audience on this radio station, it's at its biggest between 10 and 1 o'clock. So it doesn't quite work. It's as if I am the disproof of your pudding.
That's true in the effect that people want to listen to you, but you're only 3 hours during the middle of the morning. The rest of the day...
But it's generally the same people. It's generally a figure that goes up and down. So they're hearing it all. And you're pushing me very close to boasting now, Chris. And you know how uncomfortable I am boasting. So let's talk instead about the listener. Why does the listener not join those two dots together? The dot of 4% and the dot of 96%, that being the real figure. And then when they see that once a year, when they're encouraged to get furious about the overall numbers, they don't actually see the contradiction contained with those two invitations to be furious. Get furious about the overall numbers, but also get furious about a tiny proportion of the overall numbers that no one ever points out to you. Why does that work?
Because they don't hear about the 4%.
Okay.
They're not being told about the 4% in any way, shape, or form. It's constantly they're all making it sound as if the 4% is the 96%.
They are, aren't they? They are. Yeah, you're right. And I see it in the newspapers. I see it everywhere. And I also think you're being a bit light, and probably only because you haven't had time to swing at him as well. Labour are buying into this narrative. Labour are kind of addressing these things as if they are legitimate concerns. I don't remember hearing any member of the cabinet, and they must have these conversations privately, come out and say in terms, why are people obsessing about 4% of an overall figure?
I think it's because Labour MPs and people on the left can't get a look in otherwise, unless they start to talk about the 4% in a different way.
They
can't get a look in.
And I don't know that people outside the industry can answer this question, but getting a massive monstering on social media is a tool of intimidation. For politicians, I'm thinking now, not so much for other members of the media. So, the idea that if you were to actually start telling the truth about stuff, then by lunchtime, on Elon Musk's platform, you would quite possibly be receiving death threats.
Yeah.
That might make people quiet.
And it comes down to the old thing saying, well, you can't out Farage.
It's not just him, mate. It's not just him anymore.
Oh, no, I know it's not, but he's the leader of the pack.
Yeah, and still, of course, not being held in any way responsible for the last disaster that he sold the country off the back of decades of lies and misinformation. Mark is messaging me to say, I think you're missing the point, James. People are worried about the overall amount of people coming, legal or otherwise. I'm not missing the point, Mark. I fully understand that people like you hate all foreigners, whether they're coming here legally or illegally. But what you need is evidence. You need to point to the things that are problematic. And it's unlikely to be the 4% figure that is being held up as the biggest problem facing the nation. 10:45 is the time. And no one yet has had a proper crack at, well, except the rather vague notion of pushing back. No one has had a proper crack at telling us what on earth we can do about it. And listen, this is the nature of commercial media. It is, in some ways, sometimes the tail wags the dog. Oh, that's got a good response, or that's got a big pickup. Let's do more of that. But obviously, if what you're peddling is deceitful and dishonest and potentially dangerous, it becomes almost a moral dilemma, I suppose, rather than a commercial one. That is true of newspapers, true of most broadcast organisations, except, well, all of them now, except the BBC. But none of it addresses the question I'm most interested in, which is why it works so well when it is so easily debunked. Here are some numbers. That's why I say two catchphrases, which could possibly encapsulate this entire debate. The queue for the ghost train is always much longer than the queue for the your weight machine. And that's not an opinion, it's counting.
Coming up this week on Tom Swarbrick. VPN downloads soar after the Online Safety Act takes effect. I'll speak to a high-profile porn star. Plus,
some of those kids are, that's real starvation stuff, I see it, and you can't fake that.
President Trump's envoy visits Gaza as the humanitarian crisis worsens. I'll be joined by the broadcaster Mehdi Hassan. And I'm assembling Pensioners Row, a panel of senior citizens. Join forces to take me on about the triple lock. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
When you're transported somewhere you've never been. When you discover hidden gems and amazing sights. When you just can't wait to pack your bags.
It's just stunning.
We should definitely go there.
I'm already looking at flights.
Nice.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy a world of travel from the comfort of your sofa. Search TV licence together.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow, rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what Asani should sound like. Go all crispin with Walkers. Delicious.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
For a whole year, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
Are you ready to win big? Enter now at winplus.co.uk to win huge cash prizes and loads more. 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me? I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers, here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in, kettle's on.
Oh, thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10:48 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Nick writes, James, I love you, which obviously is the best way to get your message read out if it's critical, but you don't need to add it if the message isn't particularly critical. I love you, but isn't it obvious how this happened? Compare the imagery of a man getting on a small boat as the waves crash around it, or people stood around a former hotel with a caption about children being raped, and compare that to a carer arriving at Heathrow, getting her visa at the immigration desk, making her way to a rented flat and getting on with her job helping people. You are going to see a lot more of the former than the latter on Facebook or TikTok. I do wonder whether legacy media, traditional media, plays a much smaller part in these processes now than we members of traditional media, and I include you in that because you're listening to me, than we like to think. I really do. It was still huge for Brexit, but Brexit was nearly 10 years ago. And, you know, that was already a declining industry, particularly newspapers. It was already a declining industry. And, I mean, the speed of decline has only accelerated since. I do think perhaps TikTok and Facebook and Elon Musk's platform bear more responsibility than traditional numbers. I remember saying to you, didn't I, last year, I can't believe how many accounts seem to be dedicated to sharing imagery of dark-skinned people committing crimes. It's almost as if they're trying to create a world in which people don't think there's any threat posed by, you know, the likes of MPs who've been locked up for battering their ex-girlfriends. There's no threat posed by white people. There's no threat posed by, I mean, it is really weird. And part, perhaps, of the process that we're describing. I've said it to you before, and I'll say it again. I'm never going to feel differently about a crime when I discover some attributes about the culprit. You know, if I discover that they were really poor, I might be able to reach a little bit more understanding of theft, for example, than if someone was really rich. But a star sign or a nationality, it's never going to change my mind. How can you possibly be more disturbed by a young woman being beaten up by a brown man than you are by a white man? How can you think that the voters of Essex don't deserve to know that the person that you're seeking to put into Parliament on their behalf has been incarcerated in Britain for beating up a British girl and then claim to be some sort of, I don't even know what, but it's all part, I suspect, of the same process, isn't it? Neil writes, you can't do anything about it as long as we remain in this broken political system. Labour won't really tackle it, just as they won't tackle Brexit, for fear of upsetting part of their electoral coalition. I think there's something in that, actually, but I guess it's the point at which pragmatism kills principle instead of pragmatism reaches a compromise with principle. And this from Bren is really sad. We've just had a Greek family by the house next door. Lovely family, but the neighbours across the road said to us, I bet they came over on boats and was given that house. They've been living in the UK for 10 years. They've worked and saved up their money and bought their home. I think people count everyone now under this umbrella. I think you're right. Some of my messages this morning would confirm that. Lee is in Coventry. Lee, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. Big fan. I won't say I love you because I think my wife's listening. But
quite right, too.
Yeah.
Right, so that can be our secret.
Okay, we'll keep that to ourselves. Thanks very much, mate. Obviously, the first question you ask, why is it happening? I think that might be not obvious, but I think everybody knows why we're all being gaslit, and we're being gaslit because we're simply being trained to see these people as evil and see the immigration as the huge thing to talk about. So that's why it's being done, I think. But
is it? Can we get a political on it? I mean, because there's two things going on. It's often the way that it works, and that could be the simple commercial imperative. You know, it works. We sell more papers when we put that stuff on the front page. 100%. We do this. And I get that. But the change in tone since Labour got in intrigues me as well. And the idea that if you, and they are, albeit that they're nibbling at the edges of inequality, look at the reaction to the inheritance tax for farmers, look at the reaction to the VAT on private schools. The mega wealthy are running a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit scared. So they've unleashed the dogs of hell on foreign-born people in this country because it detracts or it distracts or it delivers the things that they want delivered.
No, 100%. It is a lot to do with that. But I think more, for me, I always look at it as a foster carer. We do so much training over every year. And we have to reflect and we have to look at things differently. So I think mindset is a big part of this. And I think for me, it is about training. It's about training your mind to look at things a little bit differently. Because, you know, even on my feeds, on my social media channels and things like that, it's full of all of this hate.
Yeah.
And that has really increased over the past 6 to 12 months. A horrendous amount of hate.
Since Labour got in. I don't know why that would be. I mean, partly because of Musk buying Twitter and turning it... turning it upside down.
Anyway,
yeah, me too. But you still, some of it seeps through occasionally.
This is the point. You know, it everywhere I'm looking, you know, I'm seeing videos of these kind of people throwing bricks at the cameraman. And what you don't see is that the camera people are antagonizing these people in the first place. So they're trying to get that clickbait. But so I think for me, it is about training. For my mum, when she was alive, was scammed several times. Oh. I look at these things as scams.
Yeah.
So what I had to do was sit down with mum and say, right, there is a new way of doing things, mum. The world has changed. So when you pick up that telephone, the man on the other end is not a kind man anymore. He wants your bank account details. So this is what we must do. You must take his details, his name, his number, put the phone straight down, even if he doesn't want you to, and ring me. So that's, I hope you train mum.
But that's expensive. That's like, that's kind of a national fact-checking organisation, isn't it?
It is huge.
And, of course, the people driving a lot of the hatred, as soon as any efforts are made to limit the hatred, start whining about freedom of speech being compromised.
Yes, but also, James, why are people, national companies, national media, why are they allowed to do it? Why are they allowed to... Is it such a fine line that they're actually not doing anything wrong? Because...
Well, no, because that's the point I tried to make at the outset of the show, and maybe it's worth reiterating, because I forget sometimes. This headline is accurate. Half of Britain's back ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing you can regulate there. Someone who's reporting that, I could do a phone-in about it. Why do you want to end immigration and deport? I could do a whole hour on that without once mentioning that it is an opinion based on absolute nonsense. And you can't regulate that because it's true. The polling is the story. The polling delivers the news, for want of a better word, that half of Britain's back-ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. If you don't want to ask why that is, you will not discover that it is based upon epic misinformation and misconception. So you can't really regulate. The BBC will do its best to tell the truth. The Times, I don't want to say to their credit because they wrote the headline, but they have to put the facts in the story a few paragraphs down. Other news organisations don't. You could do the private school story from yesterday without mentioning at all that 35 more private schools exist in this country than before Labour brought in their VAT rules. That wouldn't need to be regulated. So there's room for some, if you like, institutional fact-checking, but it's only gonna reach so far, mate.
Yeah, well, this is it. So where do we go from here? We have to do our own research, but it boils down to this. Not me personally, but do we really want to? I know certain family members of mine, they've been gaslit now. They're sending us messages to say, this is happening and this is happening, and I'm now going to vote for a certain party that I never thought I would vote for.
And why, this is not a rhetorical question, but it might sound like one to you.
Go on.
Well, why is that so bad? Do you know what I mean? I know that people now realise voting for Brexit was a mistake, but there's only, we've got limitations on what governments can do. I don't mean Farage in particular. I just mean, why is it so bad that so many people believe something that is so spectacularly untrue? Just remind me.
Why is it so bad?
Yeah.
It's because, for me anyway, you lose that person's identity when they start believing things that are untrue. they start to become so focused on mistruths and things that just are not real.
And then anything goes, and then you end up with measles outbreaks. Measles outbreaks and an anti-vax activist running the health service.
There we are. So ultimately, it starts at the gate. Once the gates are open, that person becomes someone completely different. And we know family members fell out during Brexit. Ultimately, hopefully those fallouts are over now, but they're starting something else.
And how do you tell the difference, finally? This is maybe another phone-in. How do you tell the difference between... Because you know these people. You love them. Mm. They're good people. And they have They are a consequence of the diet that they have followed or the diet that they have been fed. How do you tell the difference between them and the kind of... Like the occasional messenger I will get who obviously loves the racial tension that is building, the kind of people that really, really hate... I mean, racism is real. They just hate people who aren't like them. And they might make an exception for their GP, but some, of course, don't even do that. How do you tell the difference now when so many people have been gaslit between the gaslit and the gross?
You don't, unfortunately,
you can't,
James. You
really
cannot. They are all now wearing the same hat. It just depends when they decide to take that hat off.
Beautifully put, Lee. Thank you. And thank you for the work that you do in fostering as well. It is coming up to 11 o'clock. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm in the mood to continue this conversation. It's often the way with the things that I am wary of doing, because they don't make me feel wonderful in the prospect, like before we... But anyway, we'll find out, because there's a lot of other stuff in the news as well, including one of my all-time favourite subjects, which is definitely not for 11 o'clock, but might be for 12 o'clock. Allotments. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the question of how on earth the population can have ended up believing so many untrue things about what remains the biggest issue of the moment has perhaps become a little clearer, but the question of what we can do about it, of course, remains.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Conservatives say a new migrants' return deal with France will make no difference whatsoever. It'll see people who've arrived in small boats return to France in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to the UK. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says the one-in, one-out deal will send a clear message to people smugglers. But she's refused to say how many migrants will be returned under the scheme.
We will start with the numbers being lower, and then we want to increase it as much as possible, and we want to substantially increase it, but we have not fixed a final version, a final number for the scheme. What we don't want to do is provide operational details about how many people each week or at different days and different timings that we know, frankly, criminal gangs will then just use and exploit.
The former Arsenal footballer Thomas Partey has appeared in court, accused of rape and sexual assault. The 32-year-old was charged 4 days after leaving the Premier League club when his contract expired at the end of June. LBC's Helen Hoddinott reports from Westminster Magistrates Court.
The 32-year-old appeared in court wearing black suit trousers and a zip-up sweater, remaining expressionless as he walked through the press pack outside. He's accused of 5 counts of rape against 2 women and a count of sexual assault against a third, with the offences alleged to have taken place between 2021 and 2022. Today, the judge ordered him to appear at the Old Bailey on the 2nd of September, and he has been released on bail on the condition that he doesn't contact the complainants and notifies police of any change in address or international travel.
The television presenter Jay Blades has appeared in court, charged with engaging in controlling or coercive behaviour. He will face trial at a later date over alleged offences between 2023 and last year. Mr. Blades is also facing 2 separate charges of rape. Work is continuing to clear blocked railway routes and restore power to homes in Scotland after Storm Floris. It's also led to delays in exam results being delivered to some pupils this morning. And registrations of new cars were down by 5% in July compared with the same month last year. An industry group says many drivers delayed buying new electric vehicles until government grants are rolled out. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 91.59. That's up 31. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most, with heavier rain across central and northern areas. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 11:04. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And a couple of things that popped up in the last hour, but propel me into the next hour with similar territory. I also want to catch up with situation in Ukraine. And there's a report in one Russian tabloid this morning that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are on a collision course. I mean, of course, you think our media's bad. The idea of taking anything that you will read in populist Russian media as true or reliable is extremely risky, but we can speak to somebody who is honest and reliable about these issues, and we will do so in this hour. Some of the suggestions coming in are good. A fact-checking show once a week. I kind of like to think I do that anyway, Colm, even if it's not formalised, and suggesting that some people are doing good stuff. Gary's Economics suggesting you fight these people at their own game, but with facts, something that perhaps we've tried to do here over the years. But I'm trying to zone in on what the crucial question is. And listen, I've got quite a few callers waiting to talk about stuff we were talking about in the last hour, so don't expect them to immediately answer the question that I'm about to ask. What does your mum say when you tell her? What will happen? Because you will have an experience of something similar. And this is actually a question that was inspired by Lee in Coventry a moment ago, for whom an awful lot of love is coming in, if you're still listening, Lee. What will happen when you tell someone the truth? So you've got someone in your life, in person, face-to-face, sitting on the sofa together tonight, watching the telly, or someone that you like and have known for years and you're still in touch on Facebook, even though they post some occasionally quite strange things, or people you really just know extremely well who have gone down this path. And remember, it's not a rabbit hole as such, because I keep coming back to the fact that this headline is true. Half of Britons do back ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. It's only when you ask them why that you discover they believe things that are massively untrue, massively false. So here's a question I can't answer. What would your mum say, or your Uncle Keith, or your brother, when you tell them this? So you know someone who probably believes, you may not have actually nailed it down, but they believe that illegal immigration is considerably greater than the 4% it actually represents. And if you're just tuning in, we've been over the difficulties of even using the phrase illegal immigration, of course, to describe asylum seekers and refugees. But that ship sailed, if you'd pardon the pun, under the last government, and the current government has done nothing to send it back to port. You know people who believe that, like our message, Bren, a Greek family moving over the road and his neighbours think they've arrived on the boats and been given a house for free. You know people who believe this stuff. One of the people who replied to the message I saw this morning that alerted me to this research wrote something quite, I don't know if depressing is quite the right word, but it certainly stopped me in my tracks. The idea that there's actually nothing you can do, that even if you were to put up billboards with the facts on them, if we were to put up a billboard in every street corner, would any of it make any difference? And I thought, I don't know people really in that category, except at work. I mean, would it actually make any difference at all? And the way to answer that is to wonder what would happen in your life if you were to share these facts with someone on the wrong side of reality. What would work? I used to get lovely messages. It died down a bit after Brexit from people who were kind enough to suggest that we'd helped, that I'd helped. What would happen when you say to your mum or your son, you know, I don't want to make it too generational, that you do know that only 4% of the people who came here last year came via irregular routes. And the figure for people who came via small boats is even smaller. You do know that when we have a conversation about immigration, we are ignoring the 96% who came here entirely above board. We are allowing, can you think of anything else where the entire conversation would be dominated by 4% of the phenomenon? What happens when you point that out? 0345 60 60973 is the number you need. We're also looking, continuing to look at the questions of how this has happened and whether or not, I hate this phraseology, but whether or not we can actually do anything about it. And it cuts both ways. I don't know how much is tail and how much is dog. The bleak truth is that the Tory press, at least its popular commercial manifestations, takes its views as much from its readers as it does from any ideological purpose, and often much more so. So they're seeing the algorithms. They're seeing how these accounts that are pretty much providing undiluted racism perform, and they're thinking, well, we'll get a little bit of that action. But again, I don't know how relevant the traditional press is in this process anymore. Thomas is in Wood Green. Thomas, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm just sort of phoning up about this idea of maybe what we can do to push back against it.
Mm.
And who was the guy from Coventry?
Lee. Yeah.
Lee, right. So I was really interested in what he said about talking to his mum about scams, right?
Yeah.
Because actually, what I'm going to talk about is maths. It's a bit boring, right? But the thing is that because we've got this culture where people often are quite shy or quite... Lots of people struggle with maths. I wasn't great at maths at school.
Sure.
And then I decided I wanted to become a scientist, which was a problem. because there's a lot of maths when you become a scientist. So I'm a geologist, right? Now, so the thing is that in order to do the science I do, I have had to learn some mathematical techniques to understand what I do. Right?
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting anyone needs to understand this, right? But in our day-to-day lives, a better understanding of some maths would help us. So what I'm getting at here is sort of what I was saying earlier to your producer was, when politicians want to make something sound really, really big, they will talk in absolute figures. You know, oh, we're putting $3 billion into the NHS here, right? Or we're doing, you know, or there are hundreds of thousands of immigrants coming, blah, 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 blah. And these numbers always sound huge and very, very frightening. And obviously, because the person delivering that message has a choice about how they're going to package it for you. So if you're not necessarily naturally of the mind to stop and think, okay, well, what is $3 billion as a percentage of the NHS budget?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is a thought that to some people...
It's such a powerful tabloid tool as well, because this number looks huge until you see it in the context of all the money.
Yeah, and the thing is, to some people, that question will very quickly come to their mind if they're used to thinking about data, if they're used to thinking about how data is presented, right? So especially if you work in a sort of, more academic area where you're used to looking at data being presented to you, you're used to thinking, right, okay, they've presented this graph in that way. What reasons have they presented that graph, etc.? Now, what I've also noticed in recent years is with the rise of TikTok, with the rise of social media, I think the general population are being presented by data much more than they were in the past, right? So, you know, someone will, you know, a kind of Farage's TikToker will be flashing bar graphs at you, line graphs at you.
Oh,
all
really?
These sorts of graphs.
Fake statistics or heavily manipulated
statistics.
Statistics
which are correct, but are presented in a way...
Like the headline, half of Britain's back-ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. You see, you're right. Half of Britain's agree with you.
Yes, yeah, exactly. See, so it's a choice. So what I would say is, a bit like kind of Lee in Coventry was sort of saying, talking to his nan about scams, definitely maybe if your parents or if you've got young people in your lives and they're coming home and they're doing that well-worn British tradition of, oh, I'm doing maths at school, I hate maths, I hate my maths teacher, right? I was there, right? It might be that thing of rather than going, God, yeah, I hated maths too, it's rubbish, you'll never need to know about statistics. Why do you need to learn about percentages? You're going to get a job where you're never going to need to know about this again. Don't worry about it. Maybe it is a question of just as a population that's having more of an awareness of, I would just say basically, definitely the interaction between absolute numbers.
I think you're more optimistic than I am. And that's why, oddly, before you came on, I was already asking the question of how people would, how the person in your life, in Lee's case, his mum, if she was still with us, how they would respond to the statistics. Because you've got great faith in the power of numbers, which is kind of at odds with the human experience over the centuries, Thomas, because it's the power of propaganda that trumps the... What was it they said? That the truth, the lie is halfway around the world before the truth has got its trousers on, but your team trousers all day long.
Yeah. And of course, the other problem is, it's like I'm saying, because we're also being bombarded with this stuff, it's probably quite a big... I mean, I certainly don't fact-check every value that I hear,
no.
But I tend to be a little bit sceptical when I hear a value, and I think, all right, okay... That value, especially when I hear governments announcing budgets. Governments announcing budgets always say numbers of pounds, pretty much. They always do, because it always sounds like a huge value.
Yeah, of course.
And then you're like, oh, right, okay, you know. And then you think, well, you know, like the NHS is like, I don't know how much it is a year, but, you know.
Just don't ever mention pensions. I don't mean anything particularly by that, but that number will dwarf absolutely everything else. And yet there is a sense that people are being somehow robbed by the areas of relatively tiny expenditure. Thank you. I like that. I like your... I sound like an old, grizzled old crony, fogey, but I'm refreshed by your optimism. If I keep hitting the facts, I used to believe this, and deep down I still do. There is truth and there is untruth. If you can hold on to the truth, even if you are the only one, you will not go mad, wrote George Orwell. Almost, I always misremember it slightly. You will not go mad. And perhaps a reminder of why it would be so bad. So at one extreme, I never thought I'd say this, but at one extreme, you've got a fairly obvious thirst now in some corners of politics and media for more violence. It is pretty clear that some people are yearning for more violence. I wouldn't want to, for a minute, believe that they actually want the next round of violence to be more, quote, successful than the last round when it comes to setting fire to accommodations in which, thankfully, nobody was actually burned to death in their bedroom. But they definitely want more violence. So that's one answer to the question of why is it so important to challenge this nonsense, even as it dominates news coverage and discussion programs at a level that is, well, at a level that makes it tempting to be the exception to the rule. It's such a dominance now. Everywhere you go, it's so dominant now. This narrative about 4% of a constituency of people. And if you're not going to swim away in the opposite direction, what are you going to do about it? But why is it important to do something? How dangerous is this phenomenon for all of us, of course, not just for the people likely to be burned in their beds, but for all of us. Even if you really want to stretch the boundaries of your empathy and generosity of spirit, even people who get caught up in the hatred and the madness and end up doing things that they almost immediately regret, but will be quite rightly compelled to feel the full force of the law for the things that they've actually done, like encouraging people, inciting pogroms, encouraging people to set fire to accommodations full of people, even as rampaging mobs are going up and down our streets. 11:17 is the time. 0345 6060973 is the number you need.
This is LBC. Introducing the Ford Capri, rewired for the electric age. And now you could win one. Take a test drive in the new all-electric Capri to enter. And you could win the Icon Rewired. Search Win a Ford Capri. Go electric with Ford. To enter, book a test drive online by 31st August and complete by 30th September. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
Skiing isn't just a holiday.
It's a feeling you can't forget.
It's scenery that makes you say wow.
Before your first run of the day.
Woo-hoo! It's past the clinking of our free drinks
and trying something totally new.
Paragliding, anyone?
We get it.
We know the feeling.
Get that feeling with Crystal Ski Holidays.
Choose from over 150 resorts and get everything sorted in one easy package. Find out more at crystalski.co.uk. ABTA and ATO protected.
What makes a steak beautifully tender? Well, there's a secret ingredient. Patience. At Tesco, we mature our finest Aberdeen Angus sirloin steaks for 35 days. You see, the longer we wait, the more deliciously tender they become. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now we just sit back and wait. For 35 days. Tesco. Every little helps. Available in selected larger stores.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 11 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Your caller is correct, says Catherine. People collect headlines. They don't have time to think critically. Well, they do. We all do. But we all increasingly work in small blocks of attention. Think of it as a TikTok mind. And Mark points out that using the boats as the face of immigration, even if it does only represent 4%, it's lower than 4% actually, that's the total number of people coming here irregularly. But the boat's about 86% of the 4% to get bogged down in the numbers. It gives the opportunity to talk about invasion and other similar terms. You're right, it does. I mean, that is a word that has absolutely no place in this conversation or discussion and would once have been the confine of an obvious and explicit racist. But now you will hear it in the strangest and least expected of places. There was just talking about things that make their way from Twitter into the civilised world now. Somebody put up a picture on there not long ago claiming that it was an illegal Deliveroo worker literally getting a full police escort. This is interesting in the sense that it just stops people from thinking straight. So someone puts up a picture saying an illegal Deliveroo worker is literally getting a full police escort. And there is a picture of a Deliveroo worker outside a hotel in the middle of a protest. I don't know what I would have thought when I saw that, but it wouldn't have crossed my mind that somebody is an illegal. How would you know that this worker was illegal? And why on earth would you think that the police would give an escort to an illegal Deliveroo worker? And there's just so much there that is obviously absurd that you wonder how on earth anybody could ever take it seriously. Step forward Nick Timothy, MP, former advisor to Theresa May, of course, and stalwart of the Daily Telegraph comment pages. He writes, this sums it all up. The Home Office pretends to get tough with companies that depend entirely on illegal immigration, but doesn't. The police, do they even know the law? Facilitate illegal working? Is the state working for us or the people leeching offers? The people leeching offers. So it's a photograph that I would have thought anybody vaguely intelligent would have realised was not describing what the person who posted it claimed it was describing. And the police had to come out and clarify that that was not the case at all. And that's a sitting MP in the Conservative Party, someone who used to work for Theresa May. He's deleted it since but not apologised. The idea the reality was the bloke was delivering food to the hotel, but they couldn't get through because the protesters were outside. They had to literally protect him from the people protesting. But in Nick Timothy's world, he's leeching. And there's no evidence at all, the police say, that he is in any way an illegal worker. Look, illegal workers exist. But if you see one person doing one job and think everybody must be illegal, you're part of the problem that sees one person coming here via one route and thinks everybody must be coming here dishonestly or coming here illegally. It's a state of absolute madness, to the point where I wonder what on earth you can do about it. Donna is in Glasgow. Donna, what would you like to say?
Hi. I just wanted to talk about, you know, why people think it's more than 4% or it's the majority of the immigration. So just putting that in perspective, I live in Glasgow, I live in the East End, and if you believe Farage and his pals, then there's at least 5 migrant hotels in Glasgow where about 500 fighting age men, you know, make it as sensational as possible. So therefore, me, this wee middle-aged white woman in the middle of Glasgow, I should be terrified, right?
Of course,
I should be walking out of Glasgow or walking out of my house and being surrounded by these men.
Not as terrified as you should be in the West End of London, I read this week. Apparently the West End of London, where I work every single day.
Canterbury jewellery.
It's the killing fields, apparently. But anyway.
So if I'm just, and again, I'm very working class, as much as I live a lot better the life now and I earn more money. But at the same time, as a normal person, if I go on Twitter, that's all I see. So therefore, I'm told on Twitter that that's the same in every town, in every city, and everywhere. So if I go outside as a normal working class person, that's what I see. So on the telly or on Twitter, on YouTube, on everything, pushed by these right-wing, I don't, you call them what you want, whether they're right-wing, they're fascist, whatever, they're pushing this narrative that my town is overrun. Putting this into perspective, I live in a street of around 200 houses. It's working class. Some are bought, some are rented. We've only got one non-white family in my whole street. So where are they?
Then you find a building that that is housing asylum seekers, and it's proof that all the buildings are housing the asylum. That's the point, isn't it? You find
that's
one.
What I can see.
Yeah. In fact, there's a good example of this. A caller was telling us about it last week up in Runcorn and Helsby, where the Reform MP Sarah Poachin named a street, claimed it had been blighted by violence and antisocial behaviour. Actually made the mistake, of course, of naming the street, because then all the people that lived on it, Donna, could do what you do and say they don't recognise her description at all. But so the more specific you are, this is what Farage is very good at. Never specific enough to be challenged. You said, well, actually, there is a hotel full of asylum seekers. I should know, because I turned up with a film crew, but I absolutely wouldn't encourage anybody else to turn up there and be violent.
Exactly, and that's the problem. So you've got all this, and if I'm just somebody who is obsessed with just Twitter and I don't have many, I'm lucky because my TikTok algorithm is really good and it's very anti-racism and stuff. But my ex, that I'm hardly ever on, that's all it's there. So if I'd gone that, everything I see, now your question that you asked just before I came on was literally, you know, what the people who believe this, what do they say when you tell them?
Yeah.
That's their answer. Well, look at all the videos.
It's true, of course.
Well, I don't blog about videoing, like, my street and saying, oh, look, there's no brown people.
Yeah, here's that's my social normal. Media showing me that. And that's why, of course, that's why they want the ethnicity of a criminal to be released, or not even of a criminal, of course. So the man that doesn't think that the voters of Essex should be told that their candidate has actually been incarcerated for battering a British woman also thinks that we should be told the ethnicity of all people accused of all violent crimes, because you can add to the idea that it's actually an indicator of criminality.
So you know the mad kind of solution to this?
Go on.
Is do it for everybody.
Yeah, of course.
So every police report, a white Christian man has beat up a white Christian woman, or a white Christian man has done this, because that is the only way you're going to understand the ridiculousness of it. But I think the horse is bolted.
Yeah, but then we come back to the, I don't know whether it's the chicken or the egg, it wouldn't get reported.
No, exactly.
It wouldn't get reported in the same way, you know. It's
If you go on the likes of YouTube and stuff, or anywhere, right, and I look, my family think I'm crazy because I like to know what the, as I call it, the enemy are saying. So I watch these podcasts with the same people and the same narrative, and it's like they're working for a script. But see, likewise, James, I struggle to find any voices other than the likes of maybe yourself. There's a guy on X called The Bear who's really good at, like, you know, debunking all this nonsense.
Yeah.
You've got other kind of people like Gadget and other people who like debunk all the rubbish.
I'm not as familiar with it all as you are. It is an absolute ocean with a couple of tiny islands. It makes you understand why some people are so keen to close down those tiny islands, of course. But that is it. And that does that give you any sympathy for the people that we're talking about?
No, I mean, because you're an adult. Everything but that. You know, the government are spying on me, or, you know, the government are telling me I need to pay more taxes. Why am I paying more taxes? Then this idiot on X is telling me that there's 5,000 migrants rampaging my streets and raping all the children, but I believe them without a question. It baffles me.
I don't know. Now I'm worried that the stirrings of the contempt for the con men, compassion for the con position is unhelpful. I think we should all be more Donna? We should all be more like Donna. As you're adults, you should be able to see through it. The problem is, telling the difference between the people who don't want to see through it, the people who might know that it's true, and the people that it's not true, but quite like what it's doing. And that makes you wonder, why are they doing it? So just to make Donna's point, are you aware of the 12 men charged last week in connection with child sex offences, all aged between 20 and 30, and all accused of offences involving a female victim aged between 11 and 14? Offences alleged or reported to have taken place in locations including Warwickshire, Yorkshire, Newcastle-upon-Tyne and Darlington between 2018 and 2021. Are you aware of that? It was at Leamington. They would appear at Leamington Magistrates Court on the 29th of August.
Yeah, so there's a really good account, and I can't remember her name.
But I mean, my average listener won't. They won't know about that. And I know you do. I didn't realise you were still on the line there, actually. I was watching the news headlines coming up on the horizon, and I will leave everybody listening to wonder why, because it's a live case, so I don't want to talk about it any further. To wonder why that story hasn't had greater coverage. I mean, you'd have imagined, wouldn't you think that 12 men, all aged between 20 and 30, accused of various child sex offences against a female victim aged between 11 and 14 years old, up and down the country, I don't know. Can you think why that story hasn't received the kind of coverage that you might otherwise expect from people who, for example, think that the ethnicity of all men accused of such crimes should be immediately released to the public? It's coming up to 11:30. Thomas Watts, how's your headlines?
The Home Secretary has refused to put a figure on how many migrants will be returned to France as part of a new deal. Yvette Cooper says the one-in, one-out scheme sends a clear message to people considering crossing the English Channel. The former Arsenal footballer Thomas Partey has appeared in court charged with sexual offences. The 32-year-old, who previously denied the charges, is accused of raping two women and sexually assaulting a third. Engineers are working to restore power to properties in the north and northeast of Scotland. Storm Floris has led to widespread disruption to road and rail routes. LBC weather. Sunshine and showers for most, with some heavier rain in central and northern areas. A high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Any tips for the racing?
Yeah. Your best bet is to enter BetVictor for their new customer welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they give you £20 in free bets on the horse racing. But here's another tip. If you're at the races, head to the paddock. You get lots of info they don't put in the race cards.
Like what?
Like the fact I'm seeing one of them drop a lot of weight right now.
No. Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the racing at BetVictor. 18 plus, opt in, bet on horse racing at odds of evens or greater, no cash out, 7-day expiry, terms and conditions apply, gambleaware.org.
With Little Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Little Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Little Plus and get a little bit more at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August, full T's and C's apply, see little.co.uk/spin.
What makes match day? You know Maggie's cap is the bag.
Mate, piking all day, every day.
Mark, the cabbie, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the game.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down the dog and duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace, he gets the chilli garlic ratio spot on.
Match Day is about more than just the game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:32 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we cast our net rather further afield now and return to the question of what on earth is going on between Russia and Ukraine, or more pertinently, between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. A popular Russian newspaper reports this morning that they are on a collision course In fact, that's the phrase they use. A head-on collision seems unavoidable. You'll understand I'm reading it in translation because I don't, as Peter Cook might have said, I don't have the Russian to read Moskovsky Komsomolets in the original language. But the Trump locomotive and the Putin locomotive are speeding towards each other and neither is about to turn off or stop and reverse. Anne Applebaum is a columnist for The Atlantic and a senior fellow at Johns Hopkins University. She's also, as you know, because she came on this programme to talk about it, the author of Autocracy, Inc. And a keen follower of these movements and these events. I mean, first of all, Anne, I suppose, how significant is it that this would be reported in Russia, where, of course, the media is far from free?
Well, the Russian media has been reporting hysterical things about Trump, both good and bad, since he was elected. I think the day of his election or the day after, they put naked photographs of Melania on television. Periodically, they threaten to use nuclear weapons. Sometimes they make fun of him. I mean, I'm not sure I would read too much into this one article, except that, you know, maybe it's in somebody's interest in some part of the Russian administration to make it sound like there's some kind of conflict coming.
And how significant is the shift in tone from Donald Trump on Vladimir Putin? Because one of the few things you could say about him in the last administration and for much of the first few months in this administration was that he wouldn't do anything or say anything that was likely to upset Putin. And that is no longer the case, is it?
Well, it's a little bit odd because on the one hand, he's now saying some more inflammatory things. On the other hand, in practice, the U.S. has been slowly lifting sanctions because a sanctions regime requires that you continue to follow the way the money is going and the way trade is going. And the Trump administration hasn't been doing that. Trump administration has continued to put cuts on Russian independent media that used to be supported with U.S. money. There's still unclear relationships between the U.S. and Ukraine, and Trump doesn't make noises about supporting Ukraine fully to the end, to win the war and so on, the way Biden once did. So, you know, he's also, I should say, he's given a lot of different deadlines. Actually, there's one this week. I think August the 8th was the latest deadline when there had to be some kind of decision. So I'm not sure.
Supposed to end on day one, just to remind deadline fans. Yeah. That was the original claim.
Yeah. I mean, he keeps shifting around. So I'm not sure that from Moscow's point of view, this necessarily looks like anything that's all that different. I mean, right now, it still amounts to threats and language. There does seem to be some kind of business negotiations that are happening, and there are people around Trump who seem to want to do business deals with Moscow. And I hear a lot about it. I can't prove any of it. And so I don't want to name any names, but I know lots of people are trying to get to the bottom of that. And I'm sure that's going on. I think it may be that Trump has finally worked out that Putin isn't his friend or doesn't feel the same way about him that he feels about the Russian president, and maybe is beginning to understand that he looks pretty stupid having made all these promises and promised to end the war so many times. And maybe that's, you know, maybe that's a good thing. I'm still at the stage of not wanting to read too much into it until I see the Trump administration doing something real, making real changes that really matter on the ground in the war to Ukrainians. And they haven't done that yet.
So in some ways, the two administrations, the Kremlin and the White House, are more similar to each other than they are to traditional Western models of government. I'm struck by Steve Rosenberg of the BBC used a phrase in his report this morning where, talking about the U.S. nuclear submarines that Trump was talking about earlier this week, And Steve uses the phrase claims he's repositioned closer to Russia. I don't think we'd have used the word claims with the previous American president.
Well, I don't know how much this has gotten play in Britain. Trump, in the last few days, fired a government statistician who gave him some numbers that he didn't like.
Just say that again, Anne, if you would, because it has had some coverage in Britain, but I still think some words deserve a little bit more emphasis than others.
So there was a statistician who produces statistics on the American labor market, and she produced numbers that the Trump administration, well, rather the President Trump actually, didn't like, and so he fired her. When you have a president doing that, then you have to ask, is this a president who wants us to know the truth? Does he want us to understand what's really happening? Of course, there's all kinds of doubt and question over what really happened after the Americans dropped bombs on Iran. Mm. There were some reports that said that not all the facilities were destroyed. And the president got very angry when those reports appeared, even though they seemed to come from reliable U.S. government sources. So, you know, when you have a president who keeps pushing back against traditional government reliable sources of information saying they're not true, then, of course, when he does do something like, say, he's sending nuclear submarines, then, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty, it makes a lot of sense to say, well, we don't really know whether that's happened or not.
In the middle of a phone-in on very different territory, but the uniting theme is actually gaslighting. And I just wondered, Anne, on a personal level, how do you do what Orwell told us we all had to do at times like this? How do you hold on to the truth in your work and in your personal life?
I mean, I still rely on people who I know or reporters that I know or sources that have been proven true to me in the past. I mean, in this area, Russia and Ukraine, I do know who almost all the people are. I mean, I would believe anything Steve Rosenberg wrote. Mm-hmm. At least I would know that he was trying to be accurate. I mean, everybody makes mistakes, you know, but I would also assume that Steve Rosenberg would tell us when he had made a major mistake. And I try and sort through the world that way. And in areas where I don't know the people and where I'm not sure, you know, what's true, then I try not to have strong opinions. But you have to use experience. You have to watch who uses which sources. What is their goal in presenting information? Are they trying to express something real, or are they trying to produce propaganda? I mean, you have to look at people's attitudes as well as what they're saying.
And Autocracy Inc., of course, reminds us what can happen when we lose sight of those tools and lose grip of those tactics. Finally, off the back of what you've just said, what is the sort of current state of play with regards to a possible peace between Russia and America, between Russia and Ukraine? Because Steve Witkoff, Trump's special envoy, is due in Moscow this week. Is there any cause for any optimism at all?
So far, the president of Russia has never said that he wanted to end the war. He has never said that he wants a ceasefire, and he has never walked back from his original goal, which is the destruction of Ukraine and of Ukrainian independence and the absorption of Ukraine into some kind of Russian empire or sphere of influence. So he hasn't done that yet. When he eventually someday does, or his successor does, when they finally are able to admit that the war was a mistake and that Ukraine is allowed to be an independent country, that's when we'll know that the war could be over or could be heading in that direction. And I do believe that will happen. I just don't know whether it's going to happen this summer or at some later date. It's not a war that Russia can fight indefinitely. They don't have an indefinite number of young men who are willing to die in order to make a little bit of extra money. And they don't have an infinite amount of resources. So it will happen. It would have happened faster if we'd had a U.S. administration that was willing to put much more pressure on Russia. And it would happen faster if Europe and Britain and the rest of the democratic world were also more united and were able to help Ukraine with greater speed. So far, all I can say is that we don't have any indication that Putin's ready to end the war.
Anne Applebaum, thank you very much indeed. You're very much on my list of people that we can trust and who we should listen closely to on these matters. Columnist for The Atlantic and a senior fellow at Johns Hopkins University, author as well of University Inc. It's coming up, Autocracy Inc. even. It's coming up to 11:43. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we continue the conversation about what happens when the lies prevail. It's a bit of a uniting theme with the conversation about Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, but of a rather different flavour. I just thought I'd read you the full statement from the Metropolitan Police about that ludicrous moment on Twitter when a Conservative MP, a sitting Conservative MP and regular contributor to the Daily Telegraph, I think he even got knighted by Theresa May, he shared a ludicrous claim that an illegal Deliveroo worker was receiving a full police escort. This person, the Metropolitan Police said, was delivering to the hotel. They were not being accommodated there. There is no evidence to suggest they were working illegally. They were surrounded and intimidated by those gathered outside, and officers intervened to make sure they got away safely. So not only is that a picture of modern Britain, it is also a picture that will be completely distorted and disseminated by a sitting member of parliament, a senior member of the Conservative Party, who subsequently deleted his message and acknowledged the police's explanation, but offered nothing by way of apology. Extraordinary. You make a mistake, you should always apologise. 11:44 is the time. Brian is in Milton Keynes. Brian, back to the conversation in hand. How do we deal with the people that believe the kind of stuff that Nick Timothy mistakenly posted on social media earlier this week?
Morning, James. Hello, my analogy, if I was to explain it, say, to my dear old mum, would be we live in a street called Europe. In our house, the UK, our mortgage is 100%. Our next-door neighbour, Germany, their mortgage is 60%. Within our house, think of it as a Noah's Ark, if you like. And we have one of each profession in the house. But our cleaners are actually paying more tax than the billionaires that live in our house. The roof's leaking.
In percentage terms, I'm not sure this analogy is entirely... I mean, and I'm a big fan of analogies, as you know, but you've lost me, mate. I don't know, maybe your mum is a bear of bigger brain than I am. I mean, in terms of how do you present these statistics? You don't need an analogy. Here is someone who believes that the massive majority of people coming into this country from overseas are coming here irregularly or illegally. The real figure is 4%. What happens when you give them that figure?
No, sorry, James. The last bit I was going to say was that we actually need the immigrants. We need that. We need that to
get
to...
Well, I know that, and you know that, but these people think they're all wrong-uns. How do you give them the pill? How do we administer this antidote, Brian?
Just give them the facts. Just give them the facts and say, I'm a retired bricklayer, I can get the facts. It is a struggle sometimes speaking to colleagues. Look up, you know, don't look down. These people aren't the problem.
And what happens when you say that? What happens to I mean, do you know people who've swallowed the sort of online propaganda holes? Yes, okay, and can you reach them? Do you know how to reach them? Have you managed to reach them?
No, if I'm honest. Dear friends, we have some lively discussions, but... You know, it's a bit of a no-no. So we just agree to disagree, James.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, all the analogies in the world aren't going to break through an agreement to disagree, are they? It's a really tricky one. I just do find myself sometimes when I'm a bit shy of it. Not shy is the wrong word. I just a bit battered is probably the best word by a subject. I mean, look at the state of the UK media and point out to me now, if you would, the people or the platforms where the coverage in recent years has reflected the reality. So whether you knew the 4% figure or not, the coverage of whether it's small boat crossings or whether it's immigration in general, the coverage that you have read or listened to or watched roughly reflects the reality of that constituency of migrant being 4% of the total figure. Just point me out the person. So you've got Zoe Gardner, who's wonderful, but she only gets to be a guest on other people's programmes, as far as I'm aware. But point me to the columnists, point me to the editors, point me to the presenters, who, if you listen to them or read them or watch them on a regular basis, you would actually find yourself unsurprised by these figures. You'd go, yeah, that sounds about right. That's about the level of coverage I would expect for something that is a 4% proportion of a bigger phenomenon. And then you'll understand why I sometimes feel a bit battered, all right? Why I sometimes feel, whoa, what is the point? Well, it doesn't matter how big your audience is. You're still just a tiny speck on the bigger canvas. But then we do a conversation. We have a phone-in like the one we've done today. And I come away sometimes thinking, it's not over yet. It's another 10 minutes. As I come away, think, actually, no, it's always the same truth. Anne was brilliant, wasn't she? Admittedly talking about Trump and Russia, but still addressing the question of how you keep the faith, how you hold on to facts. And the first answer to that question is always going to be trusted sources. It's always going to be the sources that are most trustable. And track records deliver trust. So who would you trust today? The people that told you Brexit was going to be brilliant or the people that didn't? The people who told you that Vladimir Putin was the politician they admired most in the world or the people that didn't. The people that claimed that it was somehow the fault of us and our closest allies when Putin decided to invade Crimea, or not. Person who considers Liz Truss's budget to be the finest in living memory. Just look for trusted sources. Maybe that's the thing you need to keep hitting. Trusted sources and track records. Track records and trusted sources. That's a timely reminder of their timeless importance.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
You've been humiliated beyond all belief.
Straight to the point.
Just pull the plug. There's no conversation to be had here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's got worse. What is the problem they've got over there?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like. From real Octopus Energy calls.
You just get it right, the customer service, the sort of communication. You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company. So well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred. Your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddie.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
What makes match day? You know Maggie's cap is the vibe.
Mate, piking all day, every day.
Mark, the cabbie, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the game.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down the Dog and Duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace. He gets the chili garlic ratio spot on.
Match day is about more than just the game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
11:51 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's a tricky one. I mean, the question of what on earth you can do is And I mean with people like Paul. So Paul writes, admittedly it was a while ago, 5 callers in 1.5 hours. This is the most one-sided debate I've ever heard. Stop telling us the so-called facts over and over again. Talk about loving the sound of your own voice. Now, obviously, I can't dispute loving the sound of my own voice. What a terrible life it must be if you don't like the sound of your own voice. There's probably a German word for that, Paul. But I can't, obviously, vouch for the authenticity of that text. It may be that Paul is providing a parody of people like Paul who hate facts. But this isn't a debate, mate. This isn't a debate. This is, the headline is correct. You can't really argue with the headline. Half of Britain's back, ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. And the statistics thrown up by this research are not a subject of debate. You can't have a debate about whether or not you believe it. That would be ridiculous, mate. You're just having a debate about how come so many people have ended up believing something that is obviously not true. So half the population believes that most people coming here from other countries are coming here, quotes, illegally, end quotes, when the real figure is 4%. So how do people, I dare I say, Paul, how do people like you end up believing such bilge? And you've unintentionally provided us with a very helpful answer, for which I thank you. by denigrating facts, even in your own head. Stop telling us the facts over and over again. You can prove anything with facts, can't you? And that is perhaps part of the answer that we are looking for, but not necessarily that Paul intended to provide. Keep hitting them. Keep hitting the facts. Keep hitting the stats. Keep hitting the numbers and keep hitting the trusted sources. Thank you to everybody who's been in touch to tell me about your trusted sources. Daddy's is coming out quite high up on the list at the moment, followed closely by HP. I could say something to you now that may be the most middle-class thing I've ever said. I don't know. I hate the way we think sometimes of cooking as being a middle-class pastime. It shouldn't be. It was something that became clear during Jamie's campaigns on the school dinner front. I don't know how that happened. The two things that I really wish had not been caught up, subsumed in our obsession with class, are cooking and reading. Why on earth would anybody think that reading books was a middle-class thing, unless you're trying to keep the working class under the thumb? Why on earth would anybody think that eating healthily or home-cooking food was a middle-class enthusiasm, unless you're trying to keep the working class obese and unhealthy? But there are some things you cook that do perhaps lend themselves to slightly classist analysis. Risotto being one. The most middle-class injury I have ever received was a blister on my finger that I got while stirring risotto vigorously. I don't think we can get a phone in out of this, but the question of what is the most middle-class vegetable is always quite intriguing. An aubergine? Is an aubergine a middle-class vegetable? Not a courgette. You grow your own courgettes. But the most middle-class thing that I have possibly ever said, I haven't actually said yet, but I will say it before 12 o'clock today, and I'll give you a clue. You're not going to believe it. It's to do with brown sauce. I may have revealed one element of my middle-class sauce-based shame. Sounds like one of those things we were talking about on yesterday's programme. My middle-class sauce-based shame. You will know, if you pay very close attention to this programme, you will know one element of my middle-class sauce-based shame, but you won't know the denouement of my journeys into brown sauce-related middle-class shame. If that's not a killer hook and tease, then frankly, I don't know what is. Back to immigration. In fact, back to Margate, which is a fairly niche joke for Chaz and Dave fans. But here we are. Phil, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. First, I'd like to say thanks for everything, by the way.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. What a lovely thing to say.
I just wanted to talk about the, the people who don't, no matter what you say, their mind will not be changed. But I just wanted to quickly add now that your last message where the person said so-called facts. Yes. I found it really interesting because at the weekend I was listening to a debate program on the radio, and the politicians and council leaders, and one of them was saying about facts. And so one of the people, at the end of the day, facts are facts, and that's the end of the story.
Yeah.
And
it's not, though, is it?
the politician replied, but who gets to choose what the facts are?
Whoa.
Which I thought was really interesting. Who gets to choose the facts? So if you can say that on national radio,
well,
then
I don't know
the
who the politician was. If you're 100% certain you remember accurately who it was, because before I know who it was, that could cut both ways. That could be a critique of mass media. Remember this headline, half of Britain's back-ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals. That is a fact.
And I think sometimes, I think there's a difference, because what they said was, who decides what the facts are. And so I thought about that, and I thought, well, there may be a difference on how you translate the facts or how you display the facts. But choosing the fact is surely, that's not like, that's...
Well, which fact do you publish? So someone at the Times decided not to go with the headline, public massively misinformed about nature of migration. They went instead with the headline, half of Britain's back-ending immigration and deporting recent arrivals, both of which are facts. I sense from the way that you're talking that it was a politician who is not particularly committed to objective facts.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name because I came in halfway through the show.
No, it's just as well. So what do we do about it? What lessons do you draw from your life in the context of reaching the people who don't necessarily want to be reached?
Well, to quote you, the footballification in some people is, I believe now it's irreversible since the B word. I've discovered since the B word. It was obviously there a very long time beforehand, but I think the B word really sort of shone a light on it.
And everything leads back to there, oddly. I mean, it's the same characters peddling the same sort of nonsenses with a fat slice of, at the very least, xenophobia, if not racism, with no accountability. So even as we learn support for leaving the European Union has absolutely plummeted, we don't really ever have any sense. I'm trying to think of something else so damaging to the national interest that the architects of would just be able to not just walk away scot-free, but continue on their paths of propaganda and misinformation. It's and how can we sit here getting cross with Auntie Doris or Uncle Keith when the people that flogged the country the entire lie have not been in any way sanctioned or cautioned at all?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, when you bring family into it as well, the frustrating thing is, so I've always brought up my children with, like, to have critical thinking, right? Mm. Like, I'm going to tell you this thing, and if it's my opinion, take it as an opinion, but go out and find, like, everything I say. Look, you're young, right? So you look at me like I'm the be-all and end-all, right? So anything I say, I could literally feed anything to you. But this is what I'm actually telling them. I say, but this is my opinion on this thing. But you go out and discover whether that's your opinion or whether what other people's opinions are. But then when it comes to a member of your family having totally the opposite of that, who's then who's not necessarily teaching them, but they're learning just through osmosis or by being near that person, that, oh, actually, you know, it is okay to be racist, or it is okay to leave, you know, the single market, or it is okay for me to never go and live in another country in Europe when I get old enough. You know, I mean, it's really difficult to then have empathy, sympathy with the adult relation in your family.
Yeah, and then the shift to denial is incredible. I remember the first time I heard a big Brexit cheerleader say that we shouldn't be talking about it anymore. You sort of think, well, how... how blatant does the con have to be?
Yeah.
How blatant does the con have to be that we shouldn't be talking about it anymore? Quite a lot of debate on what is the most middle-class vegetable. I don't know that it is a suitable topic for our contemplations together today as the time approaches 12 o'clock. Interesting developments on the Israel-Gaza front that I think we should talk about next. I don't know whether it is disingenuous or not, but Keir Starmer has made it absolutely clear that he will not brook any negotiation with Hamas, with the terrorist organisation. The idea that he should be offering them terms or making demands of them, treating them in some ways in the same way that he's treating Israel, with the threat to recognise the Palestinian state. What am I missing here?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says she is ready to resist any legal challenges over a new migrants deal with France. The pilot will see some people who've crossed the English Channel sent back to France in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to the UK. The Tories say it won't make a difference because of the small numbers involved. Dr. Peter Walsh is senior researcher at the University of Oxford's Migration Observatory.
Its deterrent effect is likely to depend on sufficiently large numbers being returned to France. Clearly, we won't see that in the short term, maybe even not the medium term. So the big question for me is, will they be able to ramp up these returns to sufficiently large numbers?
A 45-year-old man has been shot dead in North London. Police were called to a street in Stoke Newington just after midnight. No arrests have been made. Former Arsenal footballer Thomas Partey has appeared in court in London charged with sex offences. The 32-year-old is facing allegations of rape and sexual assault relating to three women. He's previously denied the charges. LBC's Helen Hoddinott has more from Westminster Magistrates Court.
The Ghanaian international was charged 4 days after leaving Arsenal when his contract expired at the end of June. Today the judge ordered him to appear at the Old Bailey on the 2nd of September, and he has been released on bail on the condition that he doesn't contact the complainants and notifies police of any change in address or international travel.
A fraud prevention service has warned of a growing trend of people selling their own identities. CIFAS says some criminals are paying people for access to their credentials or bank accounts to commit fraud. It also highlighted the growing use of AI in developing fake identities.
Students across Scotland have been collecting their exam results. Figures show the level of attainment has increased across National 5, higher and advanced higher levels compared to last year. Chief Examiner Donna Stewart has told us it is a landmark year.
One of the things I'm really keen that we focus on this year is not just our national courses, which we're delighted in and delighted for learners and the results that they've achieved, but also that we celebrate the wide range of qualifications that not only we offer, that learners pick up in schools, but also beyond that.
In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 91.61. That is up 32. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 15. LBC weather, sunshine and showers for most this afternoon. Some heavier rain in central and northern areas. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 12 is the time. I remember some of the strangest moments of the Troubles. And it was an interesting perspective that I had as a Irish heritage British boy, Irish heritage English boy with an apostrophe in his name, and what we can now somewhat affectionately refer to as a proclivity for being a plastic paddy. But, you know, my biological family as an adopted boy were pure Ireland, and my adoptive family was mostly Irish. So the Troubles were a weird period. And I remember watching the news when they would dub the voice of Sinn Féin politicians. I mean, that's very hard to explain to younger people. I mean, not least because they've got AI to deal with. They could be watching an entirely persuasive and convincing image of a person in public life talking that had absolutely nothing to do with the person it purports to be. But you would literally have actors reading the words of, for example, Gerry Adams or Martin McGuinness, while the face of Gerry Adams or Martin McGuinness appeared on your screen with the lips moving. And it speaks to something that I discovered much, much later wasn't entirely true, but was very, very much the public position of successive British governments, chiefly the Conservative one led by Margaret Thatcher. And that was, very simply, that you never negotiate with terrorists. You never negotiate with terrorists. And that leads to something as potentially absurd as letting someone's words be broadcast, but not in their own voice, only in somebody else's voice. But I'll tell you in a minute why I was thinking about that today. And I may not succeed entirely in joining these two dots together. Anthony remembers that the actor they got to do Gerry Adams' voice sounded exactly like Gerry Adams. I couldn't believe it. When I heard Gerry Adams' real voice, I couldn't believe that it is so similar to the fella they got in. They should have got Duncan Norvell to do it or something like that, shouldn't they? Or sort of, I don't know, Les Dawson. But I, for people who are not from the north of Ireland, the accent is sometimes very thick, isn't it? Sometimes a very strong accent anyway, so there'd be a danger of thinking everybody with it sounded quite similar. But I was thinking about it today because it was about, and Sinn Féin, the political wing of the Irish Republican Army, of course, and yet perceived, well, that they were the political wing of the IRA, and therefore their voice had no place in public discourse because of their proximity to terrorism. And I thought that was quite easy to understand at the time. Not until you stop to think about it. Why have they got someone who sounds just like Gerry Adams reading out what Gerry Adams said while I'm watching Gerry Adams' face on the telly, not actually speak? Doesn't matter. You don't. If your government has decided that this is a terrorist organisation, and if they undertake atrocities, as the IRA most certainly did, then their affiliated politicians have no voice in British public discourse. So you have to report what they've said You don't give them a voice. It's like, that's why it looked absurd, because those two positions are almost impossible to square. What do you mean you have to report what they've said, but you don't give them a voice? There would be no difference with newspapers. They'd print it. They'd give you a transcript of something. But they, I don't know. I still don't fully get it. Although a lot of people are fully behind my Les Dawson suggestion, if he was, of course, around at the time. I just found myself thinking about that today, because this got extraordinarily little coverage at the time. Keir Starmer has explained in absolutely clear terms that he will not be talking to or negotiating with Hamas in any way, shape or form. He has made it crystal clear. I mean, it was speaking to ITV West Country, which perhaps gives you an example of why the pickup hasn't been greater. But he categorically insists that he will not be, and his decision to potentially recognise a Palestinian state unless Israel commits to a ceasefire and two-state solution will not in any way brook negotiation with or even acknowledgement of the anything that would look like a kind of a recognition of Hamas as a meaningful negotiator in this process. I thought it was really, really, really easy to understand. And then I turn to Rupert Murdoch's Times today, and I discover that the latest attempts to attack Keir Starmer on this issue, with the front page echoing the words of the Israeli foreign minister and the comment pages going further, they are arguing now that Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister, should in fact be negotiating with Hamas, should be making demands of them or insisting that they do certain things in order to deserve the recognition of a Palestinian state. And listen, the phone-in is going to be a question of, am I missing something here? It's perfectly possible that I'm not, because this to me seems to be intellectually completely bogus. You are attacking him for not making demands of Hamas, but in order to make demands of Hamas, he'd have to treat them the same as Israel. He'd have to say, right, if you don't want a Palestinian state, you need to do this, 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 and this. And if you do want a Palestinian state, you do that, that, and that, which is to treat a sovereign country in the same way as a proscribed terrorist organisation. Keir Starmer has made it absolutely clear that he intends to recognise a Palestinian state unless Israel commits to a ceasefire and a two-state solution. He's also revealed, again something that you may not be aware of, that he's spoken to the freed British Israeli hostage Emily Damari, who was held for 471 days and has accused him of moral failure. He said, I particularly listen to the hostages. Emily Damari, who I have spoken to, I've met her mother a number of times, and they've been through the most awful, awful experience for Emily and her mother. And that's why I've been absolutely clear and steadfast that we must have the remaining hostages released. That's been our position throughout. And I absolutely understand the unimaginable horror that Emily went through. But the deal breaker in the context of laying down rules and requirements is this, and it's here in black and white. We don't negotiate with terrorists. Hamas are terrorists, and that's why we don't get into a to and fro with them as to what we want them to do. That's absolute in terms of our request. So, I mean, the well-recorded, well-documented demands that Hamas free the hostages and sign up to a ceasefire have been well-established, but they are, in this context, separate from the intention to join France and Canada in recognising the Palestinian state. I don't quite understand where Rupert Murdoch's Times is coming from. Murdoch himself, historically a great supporter of Benjamin Netanyahu and his administration. I think his son Lachlan paid a visit there last year, and the I don't know, the coverage that the issue receives in Murdoch's newspapers is largely of a piece. But I am sometimes a tiny bit worried that I might be missing something. Something that doesn't appear in every newspaper today, but is relevant to this conversation, is because the headline that they go with is, Britain is giving prize for terrorism, say Israelis. It's funny, because there's another story about Israelis in other newspapers today, which goes with the headline, No longer a just war, Israeli veterans join clamour to end conflict. This is a letter from hundreds of former spies, soldiers and police in Israel urging Donald Trump to intervene to stop the war. 550 signatories in total, describing or claiming that it has ceased to be a, quote, just war, end quote, something that we talked about and have talked about endlessly on this programme. I can't pinpoint precisely the moment at which it ceased to be a, quote, just war, end quote, any more than these 550 former spies, soldiers and police can do, but widespread consensus at that point has been passed, and they want Trump to urge Netanyahu to agree to a ceasefire that would return the remaining hostages. It's been made pretty clear by Netanyahu and others that the full return of the hostages would not guarantee a cessation of hostilities. And of course, last time they were in the process of observing the terms of a ceasefire and the return of hostages, it was Netanyahu who elected to stop it. So what's going on here? Are the times really calling for Keir Starmer to negotiate with Hamas? Is the Israeli foreign minister, Gideon Saar, really calling for Keir Starmer to open up lines of communications or to do what Starmer himself has described as a to-ing and fro-ing with a terrorist organisation? The bit I didn't know about the IRA was that negotiations were open all the time. Secret negotiations were, I think, were they meeting at I read a lot of political books and all of the information gets a bit muddled up in my mind. Someone else will know. There was a senior Tory who had a nice house on Cheney Walk, which is an extremely posh avenue in Chelsea in London. And that there would be secret meetings there that were completely clandestine. In those days, you could keep secrets. Literally nobody knew that Sinn Féin was talking to representatives of the UK government. So you keep those lines of communication open. But when Keir Starmer says in, I think, absolutely crystal clear terms that we do not do this, we do not negotiate with terrorists, Hamas are terrorists, and that's why we don't get into a to and fro with them as to what we want them to do, that's absolute in terms of our request. So what's he supposed to do in this context? You have an Israeli politician describing the recognition of the Palestinian state as a prize for terrorism. Again, you have some journalists in this country reporting the words of a terrorist, describing Starmer's decision to recognise a Palestinian state as one of the fruits of October the 7th. But my position would be to treat any comments from that organisation with complete contempt. And it's a position shared by more and more people in Gaza as well. But the idea that the British Prime Minister should somehow be making demands of Hamas and Israel at the same time seems to me to be pretty hard to understand. It'll only be a small element of this phone-in. The central thrust of this conversation will be about the decision to recognise the state of Palestine and what difference it will make. I don't think at the moment that it is likely to bring about the ceasefire that Keir Starmer has called for. I don't know whether the leaders of Canada and France share that pessimism. I can't quite see at the minute the administration that in many ways its survival depends on continuing conflict in Gaza. One of the reasons why these 550 former Israeli spies, security officers and police have called for Trump to intervene to stop it is because Netanyahu is gearing up for another offensive. I don't know how much is left to destroy in Gaza, but there is still some there. And there's another warning coming from Israel as well that has been slightly underreported. 19 former military and spy chiefs warning that Israel is on the precipice of defeat as the Prime Minister summons the war cabinet to discuss proposals to continue to take the war on in Gaza. The question really is this. What difference will it make if, stroke when, the state of Palestine is recognised by the United Kingdom, France and Canada, when they join the 140 or so other United Nations countries that have recognised the state of Palestine, despite some difficulties in pinning down precisely what that means, what difference will it make? And a side order of whether or not I'm missing something here, or the call is for Keir Starmer to abandon his determination not to negotiate with terrorists. Our requests that all hostages must be released and that Hamas can play no future role in the governance of Gaza or a Palestinian state are long-standing. This stuff is easy to find. This stuff is out there. Why would people not bother to try? Or why would people, if they were aware of it, ignore it? It's a bizarre business, isn't it? But the question I want to ask is broader than that. It's one that we probably should have asked before. Rather than asking whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing to do, which is an important question, don't get me wrong, what I want you to tell me is what difference will it make? It's very hard to get Palestinian voices on the programme. Easier to get Israeli voices on the programme. And supporters of both causes, if you can speak in such polarised terms, are not hard to reach on this programme. But what difference will it make? Why, for example, does the Israeli foreign minister appear to be so disgusted by the proposal, describing it as immoral and foolish? Why would Rupert Murdoch's Times go even further in its description of Keir Starmer's decision to do what Emmanuel Macron and Mark Carney are doing? What difference will it make? A recognition of a Palestinian state by the UK government, alongside, because I don't think we carry much heft anymore individually, but alongside Canada and France. I mean, listen, I don't want every single caller to say it's not going to make any difference at all. I kind of want to hear some new and illuminating ideas, because if it's not going to make any difference at all, why are these voices, most obviously the Israeli foreign minister and the Times newspaper today, why are they so perturbed by it? If it's not going to make any difference, why are they so perturbed? And why are they so perturbed that they appear to be calling upon Keir Starmer to abandon his determination on negotiating with terrorists and instead lay down demands for Hamas while simultaneously making demands of Israel? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973. This isn't one of those subjects about which you might know, you will definitely know more than me, but it is one of those subjects about which you might have a better grasp of some of the history and some of the geopolitical repercussions. But the question is huge. What difference will it actually make? I don't think it's going to prove to be a big enough threat to stay Netanyahu's hand. I don't know that he can afford not to continue the hostilities in Gaza, because if he does, then he loses the support of the members of his cabinet who don't think that they've gone far enough. But for the rest of us, for the rest of the world, not just for Israel and Gaza or the Palestinian people, what difference will a recognition make? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you, for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge. Helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
22 minutes after 12 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where I am not for the first time confused by some of the coverage in the UK media of the ongoing carnage in Gaza and the position of the Israeli government, up to and including calls today for Keir Starmer to make demands of Hamas, despite having been crystal clear repeatedly that he will not negotiate with terrorists, while simultaneously negotiating quite rightly with Israel, i.e. threatening to recognise Palestine in the event of a ceasefire not being forthcoming. So what difference will that recognition make? Patrick is an Epsom to kick things off. Patrick, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. You're right that you are being asked to not believe your lying eyes currently. Statehood would mean that Israel is responsible, is held more responsible for his actions that falls outside of international laws and regulation.
Why? Why would it?
Because it would attach a label that we all benefit from in the West to the Palestinians that they currently don't have, that the Israelis are exploiting.
Why?
Why
would it make any difference? Because, we have investigations that are underway at the ICC into actions of Israel and Hamas. We know that rulings have already been handed down with regard to the illegal settlements, although that's a West Bank issue rather than a Gazan issue. Why would statehood harden any of that, particularly in the absence of any American involvement? I'm not being pessimistic or optimistic. I'm just being curious. I don't, because you sound very confident, and I don't quite understand where that confidence comes from.
I think that it may not change anything immediately on the ground, but in respects to being able to hold Israel accountable for its actions against a legitimate state, I think that that's the difference it's going to make.
Okay. And can you negotiate? You don't have to, because I'm not sure I can. Can you navigate the difficulties of defining precisely what that legitimate state is? Because it's not going to have formal recognised borders, for example, is it?
It's the start of establishing the need for formal recognised borders,
and that is a process that Netanyahu's administration would consider to be deeply, deeply undesirable,
adversarial, 100%. Because we know what their intention is. Their intention is for there to be no border. Their intention is for it to be a one country, right? So,
well, they've never explicitly said that, although there are members of the administration that have made it pretty clear that they could live with that.
Well, that's the game that we're playing, isn't it?
Yes, it is, which is why we have to be very careful, which is why we have to be very careful with our words. There's certainly, at the moment, there's not going to be much left to move back into, is there? But you're right, I think. Carry on.
Would you consider that?
It's gone, mate. It sounds like a conspiracy. That phone line's gone. I promise. At least you could listen back on Global Player to establish that that was a technological intervention. Well, at least I hope it was. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. Peter is in Sheffield. Peter, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I think you're playing the devil's advocate well on this, because it is a tricky subject with kind of people with clearly defined lines. I mean, I feel the pro-Israeli lobby is so strong.
I say pro-Netanyahu makes me a little bit more comfortable, because there's plenty of people in Israel that have got... I mean, we've got 550 former spies, police officers and security officers writing to Donald Trump, begging him to tell Netanyahu to wind his neck in. So pro-Israeli is... I'm being a bit pedantic, but you take my point.
Yeah, I take the point on that. Because not all Israeli people feel the same. Some people are horrified. Some Israelis are rightly horrified by what's going on in Gaza. But going back to this question about recognition,
yes,
what does it actually mean? When October the 7th happened, it gave Netanyahu and his right-wing government the chance to go for their dream, which was to push Gazans into Egypt, perhaps, and the West Bankers into Jordan to actually create a greater Israel. It gave them a green light to do that. Our response in the UK has been pitiful. It has been pitiful. I don't know whether the politicians are fearful or whatever it is, but it's been pitiful. And to say we're going to recognise Palestine, while it still exists in some format of some kind of land, whether it's Gaza or the West Bank, is at least a positive. If we do say,
Was this like a, forgive me for being glib, because we're talking about life and death and the yeah. images of emaciation, the children yeah. and the Israeli hostages who are in states of starvation that just are utterly unbearable, remind us how serious the situation is. But you're describing a form of PR victory for the Palestinian people, which understandably, I suppose, opponents of a two-state solution would try to paint as a victory for Hamas, a PR victory
yeah, there
for
is
Hamas.
That change. But I'd like to turn that argument on its head, because if
Feel
we say
free.
That recognition of statehood and saying that Palestine is a recognised state appeases Hamas, you could turn that on and say, by not doing that, you're appeasing the horrific activities of this particular Israeli government.
I mean, condoning, I don't know, or certainly not objecting to, but that falls into the trap that they seem to be wanting Keir Starmer to fall into, which is to treat Hamas and Israel, a terrorist organisation and an ally, as equal and opposite forces.
Well, we can talk about right and wrongs, and people do take sides, and who is the victim and who is the oppressor, and we can go down that route. But
no, I'm not going down that route. I'm just bringing it back to the question of why Starmer won't do what they seem to be asking him to do, and it's a very odd piece in the Times, but they seem to be asking him to negotiate with Hamas, and he's made it clear on several occasions that he can't. This issue of recognition, it just makes any prospect of Gaza not being, I mean, you've used the phrase Greater Israel. Plenty of Israeli politicians have used that phrase. Have been photographed near maps that depict a form of Greater Israel. Bad news for Jordan as well, potentially. But
I'm probably Lebanon in Syria.
Yeah, but yeah. So the recognition of the Palestinian state means that the world may be more robust in its prevention of some possible futures.
Yeah, I just think it's disingenuous. You know, when politicians say, we'll recognise Palestine when the time is right. Let's be honest, James, it's never going to be right, is it?
Well, no, and that's why it seemed unfortunate that it looked like and indeed read like a threat. The idea that if you don't stop killing people in Gaza, we will recognise Palestine. Because it, you're right, I mean, it does, it's leverage, and yet it doesn't really address the question of what that would change. It's a big enough threat to make, but not a big enough threat to stay Netanyahu's hand. Thank you, Peter. It's coming up to 12:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's a fairly straightforward question, but if we've established anything so far, it doesn't admit necessarily of straightforward answers. I don't want to use the word vibes, because we used it yesterday, but it is a form of feeling about what the future might hold and how a future in which a Palestinian state has been recognised by the crucially members of the G7, the United Kingdom, France, Canada, alongside the 140-odd other United Nations members that already recognise it, just means that possible paths in the future, some open up and some close. But I wonder if you could describe them more accurately than I can. Amelia Cox is here with your headlines.
The Home Secretary says she's ready to take on any legal challenges over a new migrants deal with France. It will see some people who have made small boat crossings sent back to France in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to the UK. A murder investigation has begun in North London after a 45-year-old was shot dead in Stoke Newington last night. So far, no arrests have been made. And former Arsenal footballer Thomas Partey has appeared in court charged with rape and sexual assault. The allegations relate to three women. The 32-year-old has previously denied them. LBC weather, windy in the north of England, Northern Ireland and Scotland today. Some scattered showers and sunny spells, mainly dry and sunny in the south, but feeling breezy, a high of 23 degrees.
Over-tourism can have a large impact, affecting local environments and economies. That's why LBC is investigating tourism and how travel can be done better thanks to Intrepid Travel. Tomorrow, Sheila Fogarty will be joined by the UK General Manager at Intrepid Travel, Joanna Reeve, to discuss how mass tourism is affecting countries. That's tomorrow, thanks to Intrepid Travel. I'm James O'Brien. It's 12:31.
This is LBC.
Hi. We're Travel Essence, experts in tailor-made holidays to Australia and New Zealand. Magical lands of fiery red deserts and oceans vivid blue, where you can cruise serene billabongs and listen to Indigenous storytellers under the shade of an ancient boab tree. Holidays that aren't about how far you roam, but how deep you're willing to go. travelessence.co.uk.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event. Are you in?
18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pop Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
12:33 is the time. I keep circling back to this phrase, just war, in the letter to Donald Trump that retired Israeli officials from all sorts of backgrounds, spies, soldiers, police. You've got former heads of Shin Bet, Israel's internal security service, former heads of the Mossad, its foreign spy agency, three former military chiefs, a former prime minister, Ehud Barak, and two former defense ministers, all calling for the war in Gaza to end because Hamas no longer poses a strategic threat to Israel. 550 of them. But that phrase there, as we approach the two-year mark, it has ceased to be a just war. And that it was, quote, leading the state of Israel to lose its security and identity, which is something some of us have been warning about now for a very, very long time. And now you have 550 former spies, soldiers and police echoing precisely those sentiments. I still wouldn't be able to tell you when it ceased to be a just war. And some people will continue to be cross with me that I think that it was ever a just war, but for me, it categorically was. But when you've got heads of Mossad, Shin Bet, the actual Israeli government, not to mention two former defense ministers, warning that the continuing carnage is leading the state of Israel to lose its security and identity, and that it has ceased to be a just war, you wonder who else needs to add their voices to these calls in order for Netanyahu to pay attention. And, of course, it's all part of a momentum to which Keir Starmer has contributed by, and I wish this wasn't the only verb I can think of, but it is, by threatening to recognise the state of Palestine. There is little cause for optimism when it comes to the likelihood of Netanyahu agreeing to any ceasefire, which means that Starmer's hand will be forced, and that he will press ahead with the recognition of the state of Palestine alongside our allies France and Canada, and joining the massed ranks of over 140 other United Nations countries. So what will that recognition mean? And if you think you can help me out on the other front, I'd be really grateful, but it's not the thrust of the phone in. What is this weird narrative that's grown up overnight that Starmer should somehow be negotiating with Hamas? Or that he should be, how can he tell Israel what to do and not tell Hamas what to do? He's been telling Hamas what to do since October the 7th, but he won't negotiate with terrorists. These are his words, not mine. Hamas are terrorists, and that's why we don't get into a to and fro with them as to what we want them to do. In other words, we're not going to treat Hamas as a sort of equal and opposite negotiating force to Israel. And who the hell would want him to? Very strange. 12, or perhaps not actually, 12:30, sometimes the simplest answer to that question is the correct one. That's what old Philip of Ockham was banging on about all the time. Let's go to Australia. We don't spend enough time there. Helen is in Wollongong. That's a very Australian sounding town, Helen.
Yes, very Aboriginal name. Great to speak to you.
Likewise. What's on your mind?
Okay, so I've been married to a Palestinian and have been following the war since 1968. So, you know, it's been something very serious. And one of the things that I've always said, people don't listen to the Palestinians. They don't see them as equals. And I see that this statehood recognition would be give them the confidence and the respect to be treated as equals in any decision making and be part of the decision, not be in, have something imposed upon them. So, and we've just had a big march across the Harbour Bridge
over the weekend. I did see that. I should have mentioned it yesterday. It was in the pouring rain as well, which I'm not being silly.
Exactly.
I just adds, I mean, how many people would have turned out if the weather had been nice? But I mean, tens of thousands of people.
Was there 90,000, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, my daughter was there. And you know, very peaceful, but people really, I think, being serious about supporting the Palestinians wondering about the best way to do it.
I think that perhaps people who have been following this, as you have for decades, have a better grasp of the nuance than people who are reeling from both the carnage, whether historical or more recent, and more recently from these hideous images of emaciated human beings, Palestinian children, Israeli hostages, almost impossible to contemplate. And therefore it seems a bit inadequate to talk about feelings or vibes or PR victories, but actually you're looking further down the road to a point where peace is achieved and a recognised Palestinian state goes into that process far enhanced, much enhanced than a disparate collection of people without any formal international status.
Well, the Palestinian people are lovely people. They're very hospitable, resilient, they're very well educated, and people don't even realise that.
We can't get in to report on the situation. And also, you know, I wouldn't generalise about Australians positively or negatively. So there's always a danger of forgetting that every population has got some right old wrongins in it. And in the case of the Palestinian people, Hamas would be at the top of any list like that. But is that why Israel is, or why the Israeli Foreign Minister Gideon Saar is concerned enough to claim that Keir Starmer is somehow handing a prize for terror to Hamas by recognising Palestinian statehood, because they're worried not about the short-term future, but about the long-term future.
So I don't know whether you know, but there have been several meetings, some in China, some in Turkey, even one in Moscow, of getting together the various faction leaders amongst the Palestinians to try and sort out how they will handle things. They haven't got anywhere and nobody knows about it, but I think what you've got to do is to get those sorts of people together so there is agreement within Palestine. The best way to win any conflict is to divide and conquer, and I think that's what Israel does, everybody does, to get them a consensus of who will lead Palestine in consultation with what other people want, I guess, but they've got to be seen to be leading it. Otherwise, the Palestinian people won't go along with it.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And again, perhaps illustrative of the paucity of some reporting, which is either an editorial decision by elements of Western media or a consequence of not being able to get journalists into Palestine. But it is that question of negotiation almost feels like an inadequate word. It's not really about the short-term moments. It's about the long-term implications of a recognised Palestinian state, which is going to be something warmly welcomed by people like you, Helen, and something feared perhaps by elements, well, not perhaps, clearly feared by elements of Netanyahu's administration. 12:41 is the time. Theo is in Crouch End, normally our Kyiv correspondent. I just want to clarify something. The specific quotes about the UK not getting into a to and fro with Hamas over the recognition plans was Jonathan Reynolds, the Secretary of State, reiterating Starmer's position. So it was him that said, we don't negotiate with terrorists. Hamas are terrorists, and that's why we don't get into a to and fro with them as to what we want them to do. That's absolute in terms of our request. So Jonathan Reynolds there reiterating Keir Starmer's position in a way that I'm truly puzzled anyone could have missed. 12:42 is the time. Theo is in Crouch End. Theo, what would you like to say?
So the recognition of a Palestinian state is significant, not in terms of a potential effect on the ground, but as a previous caller said, the effects on the future. And this is why elements of the Israeli cabinet are so angry about it, because they don't seek a two-state solution. If we recognize Palestine as a state, then we have to act under the Montevideo Convention. We have to recognize the permanent population, defined territory, its borders, the government, and we have to engage in relations with it. A full embassy with an ambassador extraordinary, penitentiary, etc.
Which would be a process, because I've seen some objections to the proposal based upon the idea that that hasn't already happened. So how can you recognize a state if it hasn't already fulfilled the requirements of the Montevideo Treaty? Whereas your argument or your response to that would be, well, first of all, you recognize it, and then you start putting the requirements of the Montevideo Treaty in place.
Well, yeah, and that's what we have to do. And moving on from that, once we recognize the borders, especially in areas like the West Bank where we see illegal settlements pop up, well, we'd have to treat those as what they are, an invasion.
So it makes everything harder for people like Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the US, who has become, again, in the last 24 hours, it's been a big 24 hours, the highest-ranking American official to visit a settlement in the West Bank. And these visits, of course, lend implicit support to the ongoing attempts to illegally annex the territory.
They do. And moving on from that to sort of your other question, should we negotiate with terrorists? Eventually, wars tend to end around the table.
Yes, they do, and peace processes tend to begin around the table. But in this moment, I'm just wondering whether it's disingenuous or not for people who seem pretty steadfast in their continuing support for what is going on in Gaza, claiming that Starmer is somehow rewarding Hamas, albeit that they've found one member of Hamas to describe it as one of the fruits of October the 7th. But I don't know when we started treating senior members of Hamas with respect and civility.
Oh, we shouldn't.
Well, I would agree with you on that, but there are people who apparently started doing that this morning, judging by the front page of the Times. You get that central problem of when that process begins. So we all recognise, I mentioned Ireland earlier for reasons that probably weren't crystal clear at the time. Negotiations were ongoing even when we were being told that we couldn't even hear Gerry Adams' voice on the telly. But for Keir Starmer to say now, Israel needs to do this and Hamas need to do that, would look very much like he was treating them as if they were equal and opposite forces.
Well, they're certainly not equal and opposite
precisely.
Forces. Onto the
not negotiating with Hamas is a sign of allyship with Israel.
It could be construed that way.
Well, I'm construing it that way.
the letter that was sent, and then this idea that it's rewarding Hamas. I don't think it's rewarding Hamas. I think it's pressure on Israel.
Yeah, and the main cause for objection to that would be the possibility or the fact, the facilitation of future peace involving a recognised, proper, formal state which abides by the requirements of the Montevideo Treaty, which, of course, cuts both ways, because I've heard some people claim that the fact that they're not already a fully... if they'd already fulfilled all the criteria of the Montevideo Treaty, then you wouldn't need to recognise them. It's sort of a bit chicken and egg, really. Theo, thank you. Stay safe. It's 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The UK-French migrant deal kicks in today. Yvette Cooper says wait and see. What will convince you that real progress is being made?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
At ulysprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulysprosperity.com.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
What makes match day? You know Maggie's cafe's the vibe.
Mate, Pie King all day, every day.
Mark, the cabbie, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the game.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down a dog and duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace, he gets the chili garlic ratio spot on.
Match day is about more than just a game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
Arenas full of fans. Stars taking it to another level. The excitement, the glory, the action. And you could be behind it all. Kickstart your career in esports with Global Academy's new esports production sixth form course. Get the skills and knowledge to join a fast-growing media industry. And you could even join Global Academy's own esports team. Thinking what next after GCSEs? Then find out more about the esports production sixth form course at globalacademy.com.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Where Theo just reminded me of something that I looked up the other day, and it is with reference to the Montevideo Convention, which has been cited. And listen, I make it absolutely clear that this is not something I've studied, but it has been cited as a reason why Keir Starmer and Emmanuel Macron and Mark Carney, or more pertinently, the United Kingdom and France and Canada, can't join the 140-odd other United Nations members who have recognised the state of Palestine. And I've seen an argument, I've heard an argument in this country that it doesn't abide by the rights and duties of the Montevideo Convention. And I remember thinking at the time, that's a new one. I haven't heard of that before. So I looked into it. And listen, this may not be relevant. Let me make that absolutely clear. It may be something else upon which I need an awful lot of help. But the signatories of the Montevideo Convention, which looks on the rights and duties of states and the criteria for recognition, are Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, Cuba, the Dominican Republic, Ecuador, El Salvador, Haiti, Honduras, Mexico, Nicaragua, Panama, Paraguay, Peru, the United States of America, Uruguay and Venezuela. So, look, far be it from me to suggest that bigger brains than mine and august practitioners of law have rather dropped the ball on this one, but how can we be bound by a treaty we haven't signed? Anyone? Anyone? Bueller? I'm more than likely I'm missing something on this one, but it struck me that if 140-odd countries in the UN already recognise the state of Palestine and three G7 members are poised to do so, then an argument that you can't really, because of Montevideo something-something convention Montevideo, which has not been signed by any country outside of the Americas, was probably a bit of a red herring. But hey-ho, you know how my mind works. I'm always sort of digging into things, trying to find out more and sometimes failing miserably. 12:51 is the time. Let's go to Anna, who is in Acton. Back to the question. Oh, actually, no, I've got a missing word round first. It's a little bit trivial, but it's a pretty good one. Zoo appeals for owners to donate blank. I should have done this sooner, actually. It was the first thing my wife sent me this morning. I was on my way into work. Zoo appeals for owners to donate what? It depends on what version or what headline you're actually reading, because there's another word in the headline I saw which makes it a little bit easier perhaps to solve. So here is the full version of the Guardian's headline. Zoo appeals for owners to donate blank as food. For owners to donate blank as food. And I will hopefully remember to fill that in before 1 o'clock today. But first, Anna is in Acton. Anna, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello. Let me just start with saying that Israel said that UK should talk to Hamas and demand things from them. There is an ongoing conversation between Hamas, Israel, and the Middle Eastern countries, is it Qatar and these things.
It's the British government position that we won't negotiate with Hamas.
No, it's not only that. We are actually Hamas is not a part. It is unconnected with the possibility of recognizing a Palestinian state. It's a different thing. It's Palestinian people, not the Hamas. Hamas actually.
It's another good point.
I heard the news recently that Hamas stated that they would leave Gaza or disarm or something like that if Palestine is recognized. So they themselves don't see themselves. They don't see themselves as actually staying, representing Gaza forever.
And indeed, I've seen some of the major Arab powers this week calling for Hamas to have absolutely nothing to do with any post-peace Palestine or post-peace Gaza, which again has not been unreported, but not quite as widely reported as some other elements of this ongoing horror. Just in your own words, if you would, why would the recognition be so significant?
It is high time that Palestine is recognized as a separate unit from Israel, because Israel has been doing bad things in Palestine for a long time. So if there were separate borders, then the Palestinians would have some rights, international rights. And it is quite telling that Israel is so reluctant. It's putting all these red herrings about Montevideo Convention. And
may not be a red. I mean, I'm not qualified to conclude that it's a red herring.
But I think it's Israel propaganda is so strong that whatever comes from Israel's mind is either lie.
Well, you've got 550 former members of everything from the Mossad right through to a former prime minister who are also Israeli and who are calling for an end to the carnage and describing
the current Israeli government.
It's a crucial distinction, I think.
Yeah. And I also think that it's been reported, and the important people in Israeli government have stated that they want to clear Gaza, they want to get rid of Gazans. So I think if Palestine was recognized, this would be more difficult. And also the world is now coming to a conclusion or coming to see what is happening. And with recognition, it would be even more obvious what crimes Israel is doing in Palestine. So I think it's a very positive thing. And the only mistake Osama has made is giving conditions of recognizing Palestine. He's just said we recognize Palestine, and it's not connected with anything else. It's the right of the peoples, and it's high time. And you know, fruits. They said that.
Well, that's diplomacy. I think.
Can I just say something else?
Are you in? Yes, of course you can.
The Israeli government and their supporters say that recognition of Palestine would be like a fruit of Hamas attack, blah, blah, blah. I would say actually, we could also say recognition of Palestine came as a result of enormous suffering of Palestinian people at the hands of Israel in history, and especially now.
And you turn it back round, I see, and it becomes yet more, perhaps, evidence that Starmer has or could have acted sooner. I hear you, and I appreciate that you may have had more to say, but there's a couple of things I need to do before close of play today, not least return to that observation which Anna has just referred to, that suddenly, apparently, we're treating senior members of Hamas as if they are trusted and reliable sources for claims, and it is indeed one of them that has claimed Starmer's decision to recognise a Palestinian state was one of the fruits of October the 7th. Nearly 12:58. The answer was unwanted pets. So a zoo in Denmark has called for supporters to donate pets as food. There is a moral conversation to be had there. At the moment, it's only rabbits, guinea pigs, and what's the third one, Sheila Fogarty? Have you seen this story?
I've seen the story. I didn't read
chinchillas,
the list of animals. Rabbits,
chickens.
Pigs.
Chickens is all right. And that is interesting. Why do we balk at rabbits and guinea pigs?
Well, it depends. Are we just chucking them in the pen?
No. Don't be disgusting. They're going to be humanely dispatched and then chucked in the pen to humanely eaten. Okay. I'd also, before I hand over to my cherished colleague Sheila Fogarty, I'd like to add my voice to those mourning the passing of our former colleague James Whale, who obviously I knew a bit when he worked here, but who was probably the first talk radio presenter I ever listened to. Not quite, but when I listened to Beacon Radio as a kid and the fantastic Gordon Astley was in the chair, they also played records. I think James Whale was the first commercial radio presenter I listened to who conducted an entirely voice-based programme. I used to listen to it under the covers at my boarding school. And he was a genuine pioneer in this field. So I just wanted to properly add my voice to all of the voices that have commemorated his life and indeed mourned his passing in the last day. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. So download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. They say, don't they, never say never. And I often thought that I would never again talk about the death penalty. In the UK at least, but you seem to want to, and you're not alone. Reform's new prison czar has opened the door to a fresh debate about the death penalty, despite Nigel Farage ruling it out, so we'll talk about it at 3. At 2:30 today, Sharon Haskell, Israel's Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs, joins me, as amongst other things in the news today related to the Middle East, strong reports are around suggesting a full occupation of Gaza is planned. We'll talk about that and more with her. But I'm going to start with the UK-French migrant deal, which kicks in today. What will convince you that real progress is being made?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Home Secretary insists she's ready to take on any legal challenges against a migrants' return deal with France, which has come into force. It will see some people who've made small boat crossings returned in exchange for asylum seekers with ties to the UK. Independent migration expert Zoe Gardner told LBC, even if it works initially, eventually it will become redundant.
The one in, one out part just doesn't work, because if your safe route to come to the UK is dependent on somebody else risking their life in the channel and then being detained and returned again, then, well, essentially, as soon as it starts to work and people don't go in the channel, in theory, well, then there's no more places on the safe route.
The Conservatives say it won't make a difference because of the small numbers involved. Home Secretary Yvette Cooper has told LBC there should be greater transparency about suspects charged by police. A review is taking place into the information that can be published ahead of criminal trials. It follows several cases where there have been calls for a suspect's ethnicity or immigration status to be released. A murder investigation has begun in North London after a 45-year-old man was shot dead in the early hours of this morning. So far, no arrests have been made after officers were called to a road in Stoke Newington. Former Arsenal footballer Thomas Partey has appeared in court accused of rape and sexual assault. He was charged 4 days after leaving the Premier League club when his contract expired at the end of June. LBC's Helen Hodinott reports from Westminster Magistrates Court.
The 32-year-old appeared in court wearing black suit trousers and a zip-up sweater, remaining expressionless as he walked through the press pack outside. He's accused of 5 counts of rape against 2 women and a count of sexual assault against a third, with the offences alleged to have taken place between 2021 and 2022. Today, the judge ordered him to appear at the Old Bailey on the 2nd of September, and he has been released on bail on the condition that he doesn't contact the complainants and notifies police of any change in address or international travel.
And BP has revealed a further 1,500 jobs and 1,200 contractor roles could go by the end of the year. The oil giant has also signalled possible further cuts worldwide after half-year profits fell. But only yesterday, the company revealed it has made its largest oil and gas discovery this century off the coast of Brazil. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 47 points at 91.75. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, windy in the north of England, Northern Ireland and Scotland today. Some scattered showers and sunny spells, mainly dry and sunnier in the south, but feeling breezy, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search "Don't Get Caught Out".
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. The migrant deal between the UK and France kicks in today. Detentions set to begin from tomorrow, or they can, in theory, begin from tomorrow. The Home Secretary, when she was on with Nick Ferrari on LBC this morning, wouldn't commit to saying, yes, there will be deportations related to this deal from August. But August is when it's kicked in. And what I want to know from you, we'll go through some of the detail of it as well this hour, but I want to know from you, not just on this measure, but on all measures. We've been talking about migrant hotels. We've been talking about what you think of the numbers coming and of the individuals coming, such as we know of them. What will it take for you to believe that the government has a handle on this? What would that look like as far as you are concerned? 0345 6060 973, the number you can text 84850. This scheme, this pilot scheme, one in, one out, allows the UK to send some people, not all, but some people who've crossed the channel back to France in exchange for asylum seekers in France with ties to Britain. It was signed a short while ago, wasn't it? We reported on it at the time, and has now been approved by the European Commission. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says that this will apply to new entries rather than those already here. An acceptance that the flow of people is continuing. But people will be detained immediately upon arrival. She wouldn't say how many people could ultimately be sent back, saying that would provide operational information to people smuggling gangs who would work around those numbers. We'll hear from Mike Tapp in just a few moments. He's the Labour MP for Dover and Deal, so obviously a constituency that's very affected by this issue. But Shivani Sharma, first of all, LBC's East of England reporter, has been speaking to the Leader of the Opposition, Kemi Badenoch. Shami, tell us more.
Sheila, you won't be surprised to hear that the Conservative leader's been voicing her opposition in Northwest Essex today to the one-in, one-out returns agreement with France. As we've spoken about before, she's opposed it, and she's opposing it again today. And I asked her for her response to the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, telling LBC this morning, as you just mentioned, that she can't give a figure yet for how many migrants will be returned under this agreement, and whether she thinks the reluctance to come down on a figure is in part at least linked to years of broken promises going all the way back to David Cameron, saying that he would bring migration down to the tens of thousands.
This has got nothing to do with the Conservatives. The Home Secretary said that she would smash the gangs. She has been unable to, and now she's talking about a one-in, one-out scheme that will impact 50 people. That's 6% of the people who are coming on small boats. 94% of those people, she's effectively saying, will stay. That is not good enough.
Now, Sheila, we've also seen some YouGov polling today that says most of the public thinks illegal migration is higher than legal migration, despite it making up 4% of overall levels. Now, I asked her who she thinks is to blame for that misperception. And linked to that, I asked her if she thinks Nigel Farage is part of the problem, whipping up tensions in places local to her constituency here, like Epping.
The issue isn't about the misperception. The issue is that there are problems being caused. It doesn't matter whether people think more people are here illegally or legally, if there is a problem with people arriving here illegally and committing crimes. So we have to start with the truth. What is going on? And what I've seen in Epping is a lot of families and people in the local community protesting because they're very worried about their safety after alleged sexual assaults of children. I think that's quite right. We shouldn't criticise those people who are protesting. However, when other people turn up, professional agitators on both left and right, this is not one type of particular politics that's doing this, then I think the police need to crack down on them because they're the ones who create a lot of the tensions that end up spilling over into violence, and that is something we do not want to see.
So as you heard there, Sheila, Kemi Badenoch saying the numbers of illegal migration are far too high, that she understands protesters who are protesting outside asylum hotels, heavily critical of Labour's plan today and convinced that the Rwanda plan is still the best course of action.
Thank you very much, Shivani. Shivani Sharma, LBC's East of England reporter. Well, Mike Tapp joins me now, Labour MP for Dover and Deal. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Good to see you.
Is it your understanding that anyone arriving subsequently after today in a small boat will be assessed as being inadmissible? Is that the sort of the first question, I suppose?
There is the potential for anyone arriving in that way to be deported almost immediately back to France. But we've also got to bear in mind that we are deporting people to other countries too. And we've seen, you know, record deportations and removals over the last 12 months. What this will do is it will create that uncertainty for those that are sat in Calais spending up to £6,000